Everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and I'm very excited to get into our Survivor 38 Edge of Extinction post-season interview series. And we've got a really good one for you today because we're going to talk to Rick Devins. And of course, he was a guy who the Survivor fans got to know very well here during Survivor 38. Very excited to talk with Rick and talk about his wild journey through being voted out in the pre-merge and then coming back and then being this close to winning Survivor the Edge of Extinction. So a lot to talk about with Rick Devins. I hope to do a lot of these interviews along the way. And while it might take a little while to start to track everybody down, I hope that over the next couple of weeks, we're able to bring you a lot of different perspectives from the Season 38 cast. So very excited to kick things off here with Rick Devins, who will join us in just a moment. To make sure you don't miss any of our postseason interviews, make sure you subscribe to the podcast at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. In addition to Survivor 38 postseason interviews, we are also going to have all of our amazing race content as well, plus Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, News AF, and also some other surprises along the way, all coming up this summer on Rob Has a Podcast. Before we get to Rick Devins, let me take a moment and thank one of our sponsors here today. Those are our friends over at Dole. I've been looking for ways to get more vegetables into my diet. I know a lot of people make green smoothies, but only putting vegetables in my smoothies can make them not taste so great. That's why I love Dole fruit and veggie blends. They've created amazing balanced recipes of frozen fruits and veggies, so I know I'll always get a delicious smoothie. All the work of pairing great tasting fruits and veggies is done for me, and I can blend great flavors like berries and kale or fruits and greens in with some almond milk. Then seconds later, I'm sipping a tasty smoothie and getting some essential nutrients into my diet. The best part is I don't have to wash or prep anything. It's all ready to go. It's like each bag was born to be blended with fruit picked at its peak ripeness. I know I'm going to get a delicious and satisfying smoothie every time. Sneaking more vegetables into my day has never been easier or tastier. Dole fruit and veggie blends. Find them in your frozen aisle. All right, everybody, let's bring in our guest here today. We're very excited to talk to a man that we hardly got to hear from in Survivor: The Edge of Extinction. So we'll finally get to hear what he's thinking about so many different things. He is this season's SIA Award winner. He is America's newscaster. Please welcome Rick Devins.
Purple Rick.
Purple Rick.
I'm excited to finally be able to tell the story you didn't see out there, Rob.
Yes. Okay, Rick. It's been a couple of days since the finale craziness has all died down. What's it been like to sort of get back to your post-Survivor life?
After enjoying a beautiful day on Venice Beach with my in-laws and then dinner with David Wright and his girlfriend Leah,
yes,
and not their DVD shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It was back to Georgia and a hard turn back to reality. Two back-to-back days of jury duty. I don't know if Gavin put in a recommendation and said this guy's actually really good on the jury, but yeah, back-to-back days of jury duty.
All right, how was the whirlwind of the finale?
It was a lot of fun. It was so good to see everybody again. Like, I've seen little groups of my fellow castaways here and there since the show, but that's the first time we've all been together. It was a ton of fun. It was awesome meeting former survivors like yourself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And like, I mean, I loved every second of it, except for watching my demise for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That was really tough. But that was followed up by the huge shock of Sia, and that really was a Band-Aid for everything.
Was it hard? I mean, you had known that you were going to go out at that Final Four fire-making challenge. Was it difficult to watch that back?
It really was. I was just like, I remembered it being so close, and just standing there afterwards and just staring at my flame that didn't flicker out. You know, it had life. And seeing it for the first time was really, it really was rough. It was like, because to me, that was the difference. I mean, that one 30 seconds of fire making was the difference between the million and fourth place.
I watched your Ponderosa video, and it really did seem as though the jury welcomed you back. I've not seen a reception for a player like the one that you got at the Ponderosa.
Yeah, they were so awesome. I mean, it was almost everybody, and yeah, they were letting me know that they wanted me to win. I think I was the horse that they were going for at that point in the game, so they were almost a little frustrated with me. But they really took the sting out of it that night. I think it was Victoria who said, you know, can we clap for him at Tribal? And that was just amazing. That was like the sea of money at the time. It was like I was so low, and it turned everything around. And then everyone was so great when I got to Ponderosa. Even for that one day, Ponderosa was just a really good place to be, for sure.
Rick, it seems like that this cast gets along pretty well. It looked like a little touch and go on social media at times during the season, but it did feel like that in terms of what I got to see firsthand at the finale, that it feels like that this is somewhat of a close cast.
I think it really is. I personally love everybody on the cast. Like, even the people you saw me have little runs in, like Wardog is one of my favorite people. And he's absolutely the castaway that my son was rooting for, other than myself, through no coaching from Becca and I. I mean, Jack was a huge War Dog fan. So I do think we've been a pretty good cast. There have been touch-and-go moments here and there. But when we were in that green room leading up to the show, I mean, it was a lot of fun. Everyone was interacting with everyone. Everyone was getting pictures with everyone. All the different families wanted to meet, and I can just speak personally that every single castaway was so great with my family. So it was a lot of fun. When you watch the show, the vibe changes a little bit. It's a little more intense. But yeah, I would say that we are a close cast, and that probably has a lot to do with Edge of Extinction. Maybe it has a lot to do with the fact that we haven't had exit interviews along the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one knows what anyone really thinks at this point.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I really do think it's a good group of people.
Yeah. What has surprised you about the reaction to you or the season?
The reaction to me has been a bit surprising along the way. I thought, I'm pretty nice out there. Everything I've said is pretty nice. You know, I had an emotional reaction to War Dog, but I wasn't a huge jerk about it. I did say that I was a big thread and other people weren't along the way, but that was my perception in the game. I mean, that's really what we felt at the time. So the fact that I got as much backlash as I did was surprising. I understand that I did get a lot of airtime, and I wouldn't give it back if I had the choice. I'll take the backlash and the airtime. So maybe it's valid. But I also got a lot of love. Like, for every negative comment, there was someone there saying, hey, come on, man. He's got kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I definitely did put on a show along the way. So if people didn't like that, if you're averse to me or my personality, like, I can see why that you got a lot of it.
Yeah. The thing about negative feedback is that a lot of times the negative feedback comes directly to you, where the positive feedback is not always delivered with that kind of accuracy.
I think that that's fair. But it was pretty fun by the end of the season. I mean, I could just avoid certain social media outlets and focus it on others, and it's all love.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly locally, everyone's been really proud of the way I played. And I think towards the end, I mean, you know, I don't want to say there aren't haters out there, because there are definitely haters. But some of the haters towards the end were finally just going, you know what? He's working really hard and he's having as much fun as he can. Like, as much as I can't stand the guy, like, all right, like I'd like to think that that's how I would play if I was out there, work as hard as I can and have as much fun as I can. But yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. If you didn't like me to begin with, then I know you had plenty of me by the end. But I certainly appreciated all the people that did enjoy, the ride with me, 'cause I had a lot of fun.
You know what I think is very interesting about your particular adventure is that you were somebody who was in the public eye and then you left, and it seems like that there were no spoilers that came out about, hey, our local anchor just came back and he's real skinny and he's been gone for a while. And it seemed like that there was no leaks on that front. How did you manage your survival absence with being somebody who's on TV all the time?
Well, that was definitely really important to me. I think it was important to all of us just because the crew, and you've heard it a million times on Rob Has a Podcast, but it is amazing the work that goes in, and you just want to respect everything they put into it. And then, of course, the bosses at my station that had to know are the only ones that knew, and they were great about keeping that secret. And then I think my wonderful wife, Beckett and Evans, and I came up with a pretty good cover story, which was that a friend of mine from college that I became an Eagle Scout with was putting together a documentary that he was selling to Netflix about hiking the Appalachian Trail. So I was going to be gone for 7 weeks, hiking part of the trail, no cell phones, no anything. So when I came back, I was just like, yeah, I'm skinny and I'm this. But then I got back and I was like, people said, you know, did you see any bears? And I was being as vague as possible. No bears. And my coworker, Danielle Apollinar, comes in. She spent like a day on the Appalachian Trail and saw like 3 bears and blew up my whole story.
Yeah.
But I was just real. People were like, man, something must have happened out there. He doesn't want to talk about the Appalachian Trail at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would just move away from it real quick.
Okay. Rick, how did you ultimately get into being a Survivor contestant?
I've been a big fan. I always thought I was a super fan until I got out on the island and these people were reciting every season to me. And I was like, oh, I'm a really big fan. But I've watched since the very first episode. So in college, I think I applied for the first time with this crazy zany video. And then when I got married a few years, you know, several years later, after I'd been in Macon, I applied again and the video was real elaborate. Then I applied a third time with an elaborate video. And then finally, I applied a fourth time with a video that I literally made during my commercial break during the morning newscast. And that's the one I heard back from. So it's been a long time coming and I'd almost given up. Like, it was a real spur of the moment thing to even send the last one in. And I'm glad I did.
Okay. Let's talk about your Survivor adventure start in the beginning. And when you guys were there, and I would imagine, you know, from first one out, you guys were traveling as a group, all of the new players. I don't know. I know you're not a war dog when it comes to math, but you can count that there was, 14 people. Were you expecting returning players to be joining you too?
Yeah, and there were actually a few rogues in there. There were two extras.
Like alternates.
That we didn't know what was going on. Yeah, I guess at this point, I guess they're alternates. But at the time, we just assumed they were playing. But still, we were going, that's only 16. You know, so there was always a feeling, I think, amongst all of us. I suspected there'd be returning players. And definitely the vibe once the game began was that no one was real surprised about it. So it was just a matter of who those returning players were going to be and how they were going to factor into the game.
And the name Edge of Extinction, when you first got to hear it, did that mean anything to you?
You know what? It's so funny because the first thing I thought of was, isn't that the movie, the Jurassic Park movie right now, Edge of Extinction? And because one had just come out when we had left that summer. But then Jeff goes through all of their stories and kind of all the four returning stories and kind of sells it like they were right on the edge of winning and then they went extinct. And then all the craziness goes of getting back to camp. And then to my recollection, I think there was maybe one conversation where somebody was like, you know, there's probably something more to this Edge of Extinction thing. What do you think that means? Do you think like people come back or anything? And everyone was like, no, I think it's just the and we didn't even talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just, okay, that's it. I mean, when Reem left, she was gone. When Keith left, she was gone. Chris and me. So looking back, I'm surprised at how little we discussed it, because all we had time was time to discuss the most inane things.
So you guys are on that boat, and I went back and I watched that scene, and basically they're sort of just like, okay, hey, welcome to Survivor. And it didn't seem like that there was a lot of talk between Jeff and you guys on the show. From what I understand that from Josh Wigler, that was when you were able to tell everybody that, you know, this is very embarrassing, but I too am also named War Dog.
Thank you, Josh Wigler, for sharing that story with the world, because I was very proud of that.
Yeah. What was that, something that went over big with the group?
It did seem to, but Josh didn't share that I follow that up with like the dumbest possible thing you could say, which is like, hey, I want to be like a two-name player. And the only thing I can think of is Russell Hantz, who's not even really a two-name player. Mm-hmm. But I say, like Russell Hantz. So literally the first thing they hear me say is like, oh, this funny War Dog thing, followed right up by, hey, me, Russell Hantz. Mm-hmm. I want to be like him. It's like, that's smart.
What did you say? I want to be a two-name player like Russell Hantz.
Can I get into this? Because I had a lot of questions about the Devon's nickname.
Yeah, I think so.
So this is the way that it worked, is all through finals week, it was a big joke that I was the anchor man. And so we were all joking about like having a tagline out there or having a, you know, a sign off. And I was always saying like, it'd be the dream is to be a last name player, to be someone that Jeff calls you by your last name. And the joke that I got was, you should be a two name player like Ron Burgundy, like mm-hmm. Rick Devon's. So I go into this opening thinking, okay, that's a great idea. And I just blunder it horribly by saying Russell Hantz. And it's just awful. So then I never have a chance to discuss it with Jeff again. But at Tribal, he's just like, hey, listen, I'm not going to call you Rick Devon's. I'll call you Devon's. And that was him being kind to me. And I was just like, okay, like, I'll take it. I'm so happy to take that. But I'd already introduced myself to everyone as Rick. Mm-hmm. So that's why the whole rest of the game, it's Rick Devon's and Rick. And it turned out to Rick Devon's, which I laughed every time just thinking about finals week.
It became a part of your signature on the show to do your news anchor stinger. How much of that was something that you thought about before you came out there?
Dun, 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 dun.
That was not my idea.
Okay.
One time, I forget what the first time was, but one of the producers just said, hey, can you give us like a news update about what just happened?
Yeah.
And it might have been the Julia vote. And I said, okay. And I said, dun, 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 dun. So I hit the music and I gave them this news update. And from then, I guess they just loved it. Mm-hmm. And from then on, every interview I did, they asked for a news update. I mean, there must be 50 of them on the cutting room floor.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera guys would start getting into it. Like maybe you can like hold a stick up as a microphone. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so I think it was just something that really entertained them and distracted them.
Yeah, you did it in challenges and tribal councils and all over the place.
You know what? That's actually true. The very first news update was during night three, the super rainy night. My castmates asked me to do one.
Yeah.
And then I did a news update. So that's why the producers asked. And that's why Aurora in the challenge asked me for a news update.
Okay, so you are part of this infamous Manu tribe, which is
a
complete disaster.
Can we look back real quickly? I'm sorry, Rob, to interrupt, but we call it Must Watch Manu.
Yes.
With David Wright, Kelly Wentworth, we got War Dog, Wendy, Keith, Reem, me,
dude.
Lauren. Yeah. I mean, like, this tribe, when you look back at it, I think it's got to be, just in terms of like TV value, it's a pretty all-timer.
Yeah, it's an all-timer for sure.
In terms of competition,
for sure.
Also an all-timer.
Yeah. So you're part of this group, and it seems like that from the jump that you are well situated with David Wright and Kelly Wentworth. What thoughts did you have about those two specific players when you were coming into the game, not having played with them, just from watching them on TV?
I had not had a chance to like go back and rewatch a bunch of seasons because I spent all my time getting ready for the game like with my kids. So I'd literally never rewatched a season of Survivor before I went out there. So I remember David very freshly as just being like very neurotic, but like kind of coming around at the end. And I remembered the idol thing. And I remembered Kelly as just being like really tough. And I remembered her for idols. I remembered the big idol play at the end. But I didn't want to work with either of them. When I saw them on the boat, I was very anti-returnee at first, just like everybody else. And my immediate alliances were with Chris right off the bat. Like 2 seconds onto the island, Chris and I were like, we need to stick together and we should probably get rid of these returnees. And then Wardog and I kind of grew into one along the way. And that's just day one. But then over time, like David and I just hit it off. Like he was just the one I wanted to be around the most. And the way we saw the game was very similar. We were both gunning for Kelly hard, right out of the gate. So
why Kelly?
Because I wanted a returnee out, and then I didn't want David out. Like at first I just wanted either of them out. And then as we came along, it's like, I really liked David and wanted to keep David. I'd gotten really close with Wardog and Chris already. I felt good. I felt totally good with Keith and Wendy and Reem. And Lauren and I were very close, in my opinion, right off the bat. But Kelly always kind of kept me at a distance, like super friendly, but we didn't talk game at all, ever. And it never was like we were after each other. We were always in the same group, but we never really talked game. So I thought we need to get one of these returnees out, and I'll be able to trust David more if Kelly's gone. So it just worked out. And Chris and I both were down with getting out of a returnee.
Were you surprised that David wasn't more excited to try to work with Kelly Wentworth?
I definitely expected that they would work together right away. Yeah, I thought the returnees would work together pretty hard. But in camp, like, it was pretty clear that they were keeping a distance from each other. Like, they weren't especially close. And then I talked with David, obviously, a lot. And it just, I kept an eye out for if they're tricking us because they have so much more experience. And it just never seemed like it did. So I guess I am surprised they never got together because, you know, I didn't know till afterwards about what Kelly said about that she wasn't excited about David on your podcast.
That really was that big of a deal?
I never heard about it from David out there.
Okay.
I can say that. He never mentioned, he did mention your podcast.
Yes.
But he never mentioned Kelly not being excited about him on your podcast. He and Wardog talked about your podcast so much. I couldn't wait to get back.
And how good it is, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, man.
Okay, good. It wasn't like negative feedback.
No, even Wardog, all positive.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about where things went wrong for Reem? I know she was moving the laundry around, and going back and watching that first episode, you know, you're talking with Lauren about how, you know, you have a expression in the South, you would say, bless her heart for what she's doing out there.
Oh, my. So Reem and I sat close to each other on the flight out there. And my first impression of Reem was literally as flight attendants would walk by her, she would practically be like, is there anything I can help you guys with? And that's Reem. Like, she's so nice and so helpful when you first get to know her. And that's how she was. Like, everything she did was out of the goodness of her heart, but there was just so much of it. And all of us are terrified that we're going to be the first ones out. So she was such, I mean, you can see now looking back that she's always going to be a presence wherever she is.
Mm-hmm.
So she's this big presence that's doing things that are just a little bit annoying that all of us, you know, if it annoys me a little bit and I see that it annoys you a little bit, there's no doubt in those first 3 days, I'd try to amplify it.
Yeah.
Because I want the target on Reem as much as I love her, because I'm so scared. And that's kind of just what it was. Like, and that's what made that tribal so painful, is it really, we really were trying to let her know that there was nothing negative she did. It was just these little things that we took a certain way. And yeah, I was really glad to get time on Edge of Extinction with Reem to kind of let her get to know me so that she knew where I was coming from, because she's amazing. And there is no way Edge of Extinction would have turned out the way it did if Reem hadn't been the first out. If she hadn't gone out there and stayed, a lot of people would have gone home. But I know when I was out there, I'm like, there's no way I'm going home before Reem. She was out here alone in the rain. And, you know, and she's like a mom of all these great kids. It's like, I'm staying at least till Reem stays. And I think a lot of people had that mindset. She's unbelievable.
So after you guys lost that first challenge, then it looks like there's a moment where Reem is coming to you as a, like, dude, let's vote out Wentworth. And that's a conversation that Keith is in on, and then he goes back and says, okay, well, this is what Reem is trying to do. Were you worried about that there being sort of blowback on you, that you're being seen as somebody that Reem is talking to about getting rid of Kelly?
I wasn't really. We were pretty open at that point. And the Reem vote kind of really brought David and I together, because Reem and Wendy and originally Keith saw David and I as like the votes that they could maybe get. Like, they really came to us. They felt like the outcast. And they felt like, I think, Lauren and Chris and Wardog and Kelly were like the cool kids. And that David and I, they wanted us to be outcast also. You know, like, you guys come with us. And so David and I got kind of put in that middle role. But we were always real open with the Kelly Wardog, that majority. Like, as soon as they would talk to me, I was going back and taking information to them, because I wanted to make sure I was in those numbers. And then you saw that Keith ended up doing the same thing, where you just saw where the numbers were going, and Reem became the easy vote under those circumstances, which was real unfortunate, because looking back, it's like, man, now that we know what we know about Reem, if David and I had gotten with her and Wendy, that might have been the most loyal alliance of all time, you know?
Yeah,
but we just didn't know at the time what Reem was. But boy, did she show us! But yeah, I felt comfortable, because I was very open in sharing my information with that majority alliance. We were pretty tight as a big group at that point.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Wendy, because I'm really curious about if you had any second thoughts on how you and David played the pre-merge part of the game, where you guys are, you know, flirting with this idea of voting out Kelly and bringing Wendy on when she is a big target. And you're both talking about, you know, how this is really great that we have Wendy and she can work with us. And David especially is talking about what a great smokescreen she is. But you guys never take the shot at Kelly in these couple of opportunities that you have in the pre-merge. And I would love to hear more about whether or not that was a mistake to not take the shot on Kelly.
It just to preface it all, it's all for me. There's only one mistake I made that cost me the $1 million, which was giving back the half of the idol. So that makes it real easy in looking back and saying, no, I made all the right moves, because that was the one mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, theoretically, definitely, I think there would have been better gameplay that would keep me from going out fourth.
It's almost like you have two different games that were
exactly
that were breaking
like clearly
apart.
I made mistakes, because I got voted out fourth, and in any other season I'd be a footnote. I certainly wouldn't get a Rob interview, which I'm so happy I do. My main motivation for winning the
Edge
of Extinction challenge.
You'd definitely be on the VFAC show next season, though.
Thank you.
I think.
Thank you. You don't want to do a hierarchy like that. I thought the voicemail should be your number. I want, as the one who went out fourth, I want to do the voicemail show. I want to bring glory back.
I love the voicemail show, but I feel like that the main interview is like, I need a lot of stories. Yeah, that you know, I need some like game experience to work off of.
Were okay. That makes sense to me. Well, thank you. I think the biggest David and I think would do a lot of things differently. We might have done something right off. Now that I know what Ream is, we'd have done something right off the bat. But I think the main mistake we made was with Chris, knowing what we know now. But even then, it's hard to call it a mistake, because the reason we made the Chris vote was because we knew that swap was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that what the Chris vote came down to is if we kept Chris.
Well, could we start with Keith? Because I feel
please. I'm getting like all discombobulated.
Two votes in a row where there's this conversation of, first, is it going to be Keith or is it going to be Kelly? And then the vote after that, is it going to be Chris or is it going to be Kelly? So the Keith vote, I mean, it looks like that you guys have the numbers, and then maybe Chris is the person who ends up flipping away and deciding that he has cold feet and he wasn't going to do it. But how close did that come to you guys voting out Kelly at the second vote instead of Keith?
The Keith vote's a real interesting one, because we had that Kelly vote locked in. We had the numbers for it pre-challenge, and that was going to be the vote to get her out. As soon as we brought Keith over, we were good, because Wendy was in on it, David was in on it, I was in it, Chris was in on it. That's enough. And then we went to the challenge, and you know, there was that swimming portion at the beginning, and when we got back, it was just like kind of a talk about Keith, like, the what are we going to do about Keith in these challenges? And then I saw how other people were treating Keith. They were treating him like this little brother that they were looking after. And in my mind, I was like, that's the relationship I have with Keith. He pulled me away one night and said, hey, listen, I really miss my family. You know, I really kind of need support in this game. And I said, hey, man, I'll be your support. You be mine. So I thought I kind of had him under my wing, right? And then I see the other people are like that. So I go to War Dog and I say, War Dog, did Keith have this conversation with you where he said that he's missing his family, he needs support? And at that point, we realized that Keith had had that conversation with basically all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of got caught a little bit playing the game. Plus, he got, you know, he had a rough challenge. So because of those two things, none of us felt like we had Keith, his vote locked in anymore. And so we just did it to preserve ourselves. So that's why we didn't go after Kelly that vote. It was a strictly like, we need to win something.
Okay.
Type of vibe.
In terms of watching the episode, it felt like that in the Chris vote, it seemed like it was more real, because then Chris was on board, and there was the conversation that David had with Chris about how we want to take the shot on Kelly, and then we see Chris talking with War Dog about it, and then basically War Dog goes to Kelly, and then the whole thing ends up getting pinned on Chris. But it does seem as though you guys, with now seven people, have the votes to take Kelly out here, but again, you guys don't take the shot. So why vote out Chris here instead of Kelly, where that was such a goal in the early part of the game for you and David?
This turned out to be a huge blunder in just the way it turned out. I mean, if the swap had gone differently, it could have been differently. But so I was very close with Chris. I think at that point I was his maybe closest alliance in the game. But our whole strategy behind our alliance was, let's not let anybody know about it. Let's hardly ever touch base, to the point that I started doubting our alliance. And I got a lot closer with David. So Chris and I had openly been talking about getting rid of Kelly. David and I are openly talking about getting rid of Kelly. And I think Chris and David are openly talking about getting rid of Kelly. And I think I'd even talked a little bit with War Dog about the possibility of it, but not in practice. So then War Dog comes to me, and it's the conversation you saw on the show where he says, hey, we have to get rid of Chris. He's coming after Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the first thing I say is, have you gone to Kelly about this? like, is my plan blown up yet, or can we still do this? So that vote came down to basically, and War Dog wanted me to keep David out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up telling War Dog, listen, I'm too close to David. Like, that'd be a big thing. I want David in on this, which is actually what I think got me voted out the next vote, is that I showed how close I was to David by insisting he be in on the Chris vote.
Mm-hmm.
So then David and I went and talked, and basically it came down to David's and my vote. And the way we looked at it, well, the way I looked at it is we really wanted to get rid of Kelly because she was so strong. But we were almost sure that a swap was coming after this vote. And we thought if we get rid of Kelly, then that gives us me, David, Chris, and Wendy as people we can trust. But we're alienating Wardog and Lauren. So if we get stuck in a swap with them, we're in a lot of trouble. Whereas if we get rid of Chris, then we're only alienating Wendy. And my secret goes out the door with Chris. No one ever knows we were an alliance. No one ever knows I betrayed him. So because we were so sure there was a swap, and we're like, if Chris isn't with us, he's going to destroy us in challenges, we just decided to get rid of Chris so that we'd have more people happy with us for a swap, and then we'd be less at a disadvantage in challenges. But then that swap happened, and it's like, oh my gosh.
Is that results oriented? Yeah. So it didn't work out for you, but now sort of, you know, knowing so much about the game from now having played so much, I always like to do these for, you know, what is the takeaway here? Do you feel like that your reasoning was still sound for what you did? Or did you feel like that there is a bigger Survivor lesson you learned that you should have gone the other way?
I feel like the reasoning there was really sound, because if I'm put in a trial, if the swap comes in any other way, other than us like crazily being put on the exact same tribe, then you want as many people on your original tribe to want to work with you as possible. And we would have more people that wanted to work with us. Also, if I'm put in a tribe after the swap with Kelly, then we're both helping physically pretty much the same, but Kelly's a bigger threat because she's a returnee. Get rid of Kelly. If I'm put in a tribe with Chris, he's helping that tribe a lot more. So you're probably going to get rid of me. But it just is what it is. No, if Chris had been in, if the swap had worked out in the exact same way, except Chris had been in the second Manu instead of Kelly, David and I would have been in no danger at all. So it would have definitely been the wrong move to get rid of Chris. There's a million ways it could have gone, but I feel like our logic was really sound. But I definitely look at that as a point in the game where if we could have kept Chris, we could have made things a lot easier on ourselves. It's possible.
And in Chris, you had the perfect patsy to take the fall for this idea getting out that it was going to be a vote against Kelly. It looked like it came from him.
Exactly. If he goes, no one ever knows we were after Kelly. No one ever knows I was close with Chris. No one ever knows I betrayed Chris.
Yeah.
It's like, take all your secrets we thought out of the game.
Yeah, so this isn't so much game-related, but in watching this back, the stuff with Wendy with the chickens is still hilarious. Well, what were you thinking when, she's talking to you about, you know, will you help me with this plan to let the chickens be free?
I love Wendy. Like, you don't need cable out there on the island when you have Wendy. I called her in the first episode a whirling dervish, and I think a lot of people took it the wrong way. But like, that's really how I see her. She was always moving. Like, as we're getting ready to make a plan to put up palm fronds on the roof, she's already doing it. And she's just this ball of energy. So she and I were on the same page with the chickens. Neither of us wanted the chicken reward. But I was fine with it if that's what the group wanted. And I could never kill the chicken. But I said, right, like, if you guys kill it, I'll eat it. No problem. I'm not going to put a thing. So when she came to me wanting to break free the chickens, this is something that I very much wanted to happen, but I was not going to be a part of ever. So, and it just struck me in that moment as totally absurd that anyone would be willing to give up a shot at $1 million for these chickens. And I knew my wife Becca would never forgive me for doing that. But at the same time, it's like, you can't help but laugh because this is just why you love Wendy. Like, she has totally forgotten about the $1 million at this point. And the only thing in the world she cares about is these chickens. Yeah. I thought I'd lost my mind.
Rick, you are headed into this very fateful swap for you, and then it ends up with basically your entire tribe minus Wendy all going over to go start a new camp on Lesu, and it's going to be more of the same for your group over on Lesu. How hard was that to go and have to start over at a new beach?
We just couldn't believe it, man. Like, we were already one of the worst tribes ever, and then we're the exact same group. They call us Lesu.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to go build our tribe again. It was just, the hits keep coming. We lose our chickens. The only reward we've won in the game, we got one chicken and lose the other three. It was demoralizing. And I think looking back, and now I've watched some past seasons when I get back, since I've been back, I think you really hit that lull right around 10 days to 2 weeks. And that's kind of right where we were. And we just went back and basically said, we're not building a camp. Like, we don't have the energy. We're only going to be here maybe a week or 10 days. Like, we're not doing anything. So I ended up starting to build, and everyone built a windbreak just to keep the wind from blowing off the beach on us. And that's all we had. We had no floor. So then it starts to rain on us, I think night two.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like laying on palm fronds in the mud, up against this windbreak. I mean, I think probably for everyone on Lesu, that was the most demoralizing time in the game. Poor Lauren is getting really sick at that time. She can't even eat her rice. We're all super worried about her. I mean, I know that I use that as one of my excuses to vote for her instead mm-hmm. of me in that Final Four, but that was a legit concern. Like, we were all as close, I think, in that moment as we looked. And we were all worried about Lauren. And certainly, I tried to use that to my advantage to stay in. But that was a crappy time, man. We had nothing but the rice. And I think the first day we found like two papayas. And it was just rough.
So that's going to ultimately culminate in this tribal council, which everybody there is going to describe it as, a very emotional tribal council.
Kumbaya.
Kumbaya. And I have to say, as a viewer, I was like, I don't get it. I don't really understand. Well, what's the big deal here? David Wright talks about it as being, the most dramatic tribal council he's ever been at. And it didn't make sense at the time, but hearing about some of the hardship for this group and what a tough decision it must have been, it does make more sense now.
Yeah, and I think that group had been together and voted together since the very beginning, that entire group, and we'd really, I mean, I'll just speak for myself, I really cared for everyone in that group so much. Their stories got me through those long nights. Wardog, I mean, he was my dude for life. David's one of my best friends. And Kelly and Lauren had both been so great. So it was really hard going out that night. I thought that there was a good chance it would be me. And I didn't feel like there was any negativity towards me. I can't believe they didn't show it just to juxtapose Angelina asking for Natalie's jacket.
Mm-hmm.
But after I was voted out, like after the votes were counted, like I leaned forward to Lauren and Kelly because I had intentionally left my sweater in camp. And I said, hey, guys, I left my sweater for you in camp just in case you're cold, because they had less clothing out there than I did. Mm-hmm. And I felt bad about it. That's something I hugely regretted when I found out about Edge of Extinction.
Yeah.
And I'm out there freezing in the rain the first night without my sweater. But yeah, so I felt so close to them and I felt so loved on my way out. It was a really bizarre experience, Rob. It's not something I ever expected from Survivor.
I have no doubt. But there is something unexpected that's coming around the corner. And that's going to be this signpost, which is going to ask you about what do you want to do next? Can you just describe what that reaction was like for you?
So it is a rainy night. It's a nasty, cold, rainy night. So after I'm voted out and I'm nice on my way out. I always wanted to say, like, don't be mean, be nice on your way out. So I'm like, I've checked everything off my list. My game's basically over. Okay, good for you, Rick. So I'm dreaming of cheeseburgers and a hot shower.
Dreaming.
And I get there. Give it to me again.
Dreaming.
But it turns out I got played.
Yeah.
Because I see this sign. And so my first thing is my heart drops a little bit. Like, wait, what? But then, of course, I'm ecstatic that, oh, the game's still done. So I grab the torch. And basically, as soon as I grab the torch, I can't find the boat because I'm blinded by the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just walking towards what I hope is the boat. I realize in my head, like, oh, no, I'm probably going to run into these people that I voted out. And that's going to really suck. So I'm already kind of bracing myself for that possibility, or for the possibility that I'm going somewhere totally by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a long night.
So ultimately, you're going to end up being reunited with Reem and Keith and Chris, three people that you were voted out. And what was the reception for you like?
So you've gone out, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
You're real low, and you're thinking about all the things that went wrong, all the people you disappointed. Like, it's a real low point, especially I felt like my game was going so well up to the swap. And I'm just like, how did I get here? And then there are three people, literally, they see, before I can see them, they see my face in my torchlight. And they are laughing and hooting and hollering. They are so happy
mm-hmm.
to see me voted off. And rightfully so, because I ended their dream. So I got up, and I mean, they made it real clear that they weren't sad about it. It was fine. And I was trying to kind of have fun with it. Like, okay, like I get why they're mad. I'd brace myself for that. And then they kept going. And I kind of said, well, do you guys want to know what's going on in the game? Cause you have to be nice. And it was done. They'd pretty much gotten it out of their system at that point. And they wanted to hear what was in the game. And Chris, who I'd betrayed more than anybody, had a little piece of tarp that he let me lay on.
Oh.
And I mean, literally, like within 5 minutes, they were treating me fine. They were over it. They just had to get it out of their system.
Based on what we saw at the Edge of Extinction at this point in time, it seemed as though that it was almost like a tag team wrestling where there was you and Chris and there was Reem and Keith. Was that actually what it was like, or was this just what it looked like on the show?
No, it was nice because we, more than anything, we were all together. Like most times we were all together, and I was really glad to get to make my peace with Reem and Keith and get to know each of them outside of the game, and for them to understand like how much I appreciate them as people, and I think vice versa. But you do all that in the first day. You know, and you're out there a long time. So Chris and I definitely started to gravitate towards each other. I think Chris and Reem wanted some space from each other. Keith and Reem were very close as that almost child parent relationship. So yeah, there was a lot of Chris and I together, and Chris and Reem were just always at it. And I Reem once called me Chris's lawyer, and that's probably fair, that I should have just shut up and stayed out of it. But I,
what are you, Chris's lawyer?
Exactly. And I'd be like, Reem, he's just
objection,
saying.
Objection, Your Honor.
Exactly. So yeah, I got involved in things. Oh, and here's one thing you didn't see at Edge of Extinction.
Yeah.
We, Aubrey and Chris and I, went through Keith's bag to find out what his advantage was. And Reem was ticked off.
Oh, you don't say.
Oh, my God. And, of course, later I have to act like I'm mad at Aubrey for going through my bad. But, of course, I'm like, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, awkward. Reem.
Yeah.
Like, if you go after Reem, she'll come at you hard. But if you go after someone Reem loves, like, she is the mama bear. And I feel like if people went after me, she'd protect me now. That's what's so great about Reem. Will you give me more Reem?
Yeah. What do you want? What do you want?
I can't believe you went through Keith's bag. Keith is, you know, and then just say good things about Keith.
Dude, you know what? That I would never, ever gone through somebody else's bag? Because you know what? Do I have stupid idiot written all across my forehead? Screw you, Rick. Screw you, Chris's lawyer, going through this kid's bag while he's out here on the edge. What is this? This isn't the TSA. This isn't airport security. You don't need to go through his bag, Rick.
So good. So good.
I'm glad you enjoy it.
So good. And I can enjoy it because I know how much Reem enjoys it.
Good. Well, I'm very happy that she's such a good sport. Very happy to learn that at the finale.
Yeah, she's the best.
Yeah. So, Rick, while you're here on the edge of extinction, this is a good time for me to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors. And I thought that this would be a good one to do while you were here, because Father's Day is right around the corner. And we know that dads and dad bods come in all different kinds of shapes and sizes. And
yeah, they do.
So should their shirts, like tall, short, slim, and relaxed. And that's where our sponsor Untuck It comes in, because if you ever wondered why your dad's button-ups might look so long and baggy at the end of the day, that's where Untuck It comes in, because they can help you pull off that casual untucked look that's not sloppy. That's what Untuck It does. They have dress shirts for men, which are the perfect length to be worn untucked. And look, a lot of dads don't always go shopping. You could update your dad's closet with some modern, perfectly fitted shirts, and your mom will thank you later. Turn your daddy into a zaddy this Father's Day.
There it is. You hear me, Bryce?
with Untuck It. And look, if there's anything I know about, it's plaid shirts, and Untuck It does a great job. Just the perfect length that you can wear.
How are they with sweat? I want to look good for Bryce, and I can't look sweaty.
Looks good. Find something for every style, from the VP dad that needs to look cool and put together in meetings all day in their luxe wrinkle-free shirt, or casual dad running errands on the weekend within a cool plaid button down with over 50 fit combinations. Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages. Shirts with plenty of choices on color, material, and design. Their signature sail on the bottom reminds you that the shirt is best worn unfurled. So take your dad to try it on in person in one of Untuck It's 50 stores, or go to untuckit.com to get started. They offer free shipping and returns on all the orders in the United States. So you can save 20% on your first order by using my code ROB at checkout. Restrictions apply. That's Untuck It, all one word, untuckit.com, promo code ROB. Okay.
I hope they have a store in Nantucket.
Yes, that'd be perfect. Rick, so on the edge, can you just take us through, like, what do you do all day on the edge of extinction?
So when I was on the edge, we didn't even get to go to tribal councils.
Right.
So you're counting down the days and you're thinking, like, today might be a tribal. Maybe someone will show up tonight. But that's literally like all we had to look forward to. And then we got those maps here and there.
Yeah.
So without getting into those, basically your day, I would wake up at when the sun came out and I'd sleep in the sand right by the fire. There's no shelter. There's nothing to build a shelter with. There's no coconuts really to open. And I would go sit by the mast and watch the sunrise. And then I would collect a big thing of wood. And then I would walk around. It's like, who wants to go get the rice? And mostly everyone would want to go get the rice because there's nothing better to do. So you climb up this huge hill. I mean, it takes about at least an hour round trip. But a lot of times once you're up that big hill, you just stay up there for a while and enjoy the view.
Yeah.
And literally, I mean, you're just napping. Aubrey was amazing at finding the big clams and the big conch shells. Chris did some fishing. I did some fishing unsuccessfully. You would just go out and float or nap. I mean, literally, you just do nothing. It was just a great time to rest and recoup for like the first 3 days, and then there were three more.
yeah,
this is really boring. Like when those maps and riddles came, it was a great was like, oh my gosh, thank goodness, something to do.
Is the worst part about it that it's just so boring?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just really boring. There's nothing, I mean, mentally, well, it wears on you emotionally because you miss your family, but it doesn't wear on you mentally the way like the game does. It's not like you're sitting there running numbers the whole time, driving yourself crazy. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of bored going, man, is it, you know, is it worth it that my wife's looking after the kids while I just sit here on the beach all day, you know, but there's not much to it other than that. And I know while I was out there, I ate as well on the edge of extinction as I did in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, probably better. But there were fewer people out there. I don't know if they were still splitting the same amount of rice. Like my understanding is they weren't eating as well late in the game on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fine in terms of like that part of the game. It just was really boring. Yeah. But a great, like I loved getting to know Chris better. Like we became very close on the edge of extinction.
So at this point, you are going to get these maps. You're the person that is able to figure out if you fold the map, there's this whole thing where you can go get something by one of these trees. And
that shows you how detached I felt from the game. Like,
what
I'm just like, hey, guys, an advantage. Oh. This is exactly how you do it.
Yeah.
I would never have done that in the game.
You guys talk about, okay, well, let's all go up there together and let's make lunch first. And that's when Keith just takes off. And I'm not doing this for Chris. I'm not doing this for Keith, for Rick. I'm doing it for my family. And he goes off and eventually.
No, and he said, I'm darn sure not doing this for Rick. Which I'm still like, what? Like, I thought we were good, man.
No. No, he goes off and makes a beeline for it, and then you guys have to go chase him down to go find these advantages. And Chris is going to find a thing that he's going to practice, and you are going to find the ability to send an advantage to somebody that's still in the game that's going to go to the Tribal Council. And you picked Aubrey, and I was curious about why Aubrey?
So my main focus at that point was to help David.
Mm-hmm.
I made it seem like all of us on the edge were deciding together, but I knew that I got to make the final decision. But it turns out we all did agree on Aubrey. The only considerations were Wendy I knew on the tribe, but I didn't think an extra vote would help her at all. I thought if she's going to be voted out, she's going to be voted out by everyone.
Yeah.
So the extra vote does nothing. So I thought, I know Aubrey and David know each other, have known each other outside the game. I assumed Aubrey was probably in a pretty good spot to stay in the game. So if I give this to Aubrey, she's the most likely to still be in the game to help me and David when I get back in with this vote. And that was pretty much the whole consideration.
So Aubrey is going to show up very soon thereafter.
Really good choice by me. I really read the room.
Yeah.
Already showing up on the right side of the vote.
What was your reaction to that? Of like, hey, did you get that extra vote that I sent you?
Yeah, we couldn't believe it. We were just like, Aubrey? And, you know, of course, because we had made it the decision as a group, all of us are like, oh, what about the vote? What about the vote? Which I'm sure she loved to hear. Cause she was in a fog. You could tell that she was still totally wondering what the heck happened when she got to the edge. So we were pretty easy on her. She was the first one there that wasn't from Manu. So everyone loved her.
Mm-hmm.
We were so happy to see her and felt so bad for her. And she was very dazed and then kind of angry. So we weren't giving her too hard a time about the vote, and she didn't tell us about, her immunity idol.
Mm-hmm.
But later when I saw that she gave a vote to Aurora, I was texting her during the season going, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She never told me about that.
Mm-hmm.
Quid pro quo here, Aubrey.
Yeah. So ultimately you guys are going to get joined by Big Wendy as well. What was that reunion like?
It was one of those like, We're sad that Wendy's out, but we all love Wendy. We're all very happy to see her, just to see her. The first thing we ask is, did you free the chickens?
Mm-hmm.
Which she says, yes, I freed the chickens. tells us all about freeing the chickens in the middle of the storm, which was just hilarious. And we just kind of tell her, like, batten down the hatches, you may be here a while. And she seemed game for it. Like, she seemed totally game for the edge of extinction.
Yeah.
She had never had trouble. Of all the people on original Manu, Wendy could sleep through a storm and could deal with being outside. But yeah, everyone was happy to see her and sad to see her out of the game. We all had good feelings about Wendy. She'd worked with just about all of us, including Aubrey. Well, ooh, maybe not Aubrey, I guess.
Were you surprised when you found out that Keith and Wendy ended up raising the sail?
Yes, I was. I was, because, again, Wendy, it didn't seem to bother her being out there. So I just thought she'd just kind of keep going. And then Keith is such a super fan that I did not, because in my mind, it was quitting. Like, that's the way I had framed it. Like, I didn't see him quitting. Now, seeing their post-game interviews, I see that they saw it as a different thing. So it's different. But yeah, I was real surprised. We were all very confused when they didn't show up to that tribal with everyone else. And we didn't know till the next tribal that they had quit. Like, something was lost in translation. So we were like, did they lose a challenge or did they, that we had no idea what was going on. But when we found out they quit, we were all, I think, pretty surprised. Yeah.
Okay.
Or that they left. Sorry. I don't want to, I'm not, those two, I really love those two. So I'm not trying to join sides on that. So when they decide to leave the game.
So you're going to have your opportunity to get back into the game in this Edge of Extinction challenge. Had you been able to use Chris's practice stuff at all?
Oh my gosh, Rob, I'm such an idiot. So, yes, Chris was very generous with letting us use his practice stuff. And I saw it, and what it is it's, you know, it's the bamboo links with the notches in it and these little strings that have little knots in the end. And there's no directions or anything. So everyone is like, obviously this is, so you tie them together and make a long stick. And I'm just looking at it going, what? Like, why would you need to practice that? That doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. It's tying, right? So I had it in my head that we were going to be building like almost like blinds for a window. And I'm in my interviews like, these guys don't even know what the challenge is. I've outsmarted all of them. And I was obviously totally wrong, but I still don't see why you need to practice tying a stick together. I didn't practice and I did okay.
Yeah. You did all right. So were you aware, I know you said that you guys went through Keith's bag. Were you aware that Keith had a punishment that he was going to dole out?
Yes. Yes. And I was so mad when I didn't get that punishment, because I had read the map close. Like, I was the only one that basically had it figured out. I just misread where it was. And then, you know, infamously Reem and Keith came across it in the ocean. And she did not give it to him, FYI.
Mm-hmm. No, we got that. I got that on the red carpet from Reem.
Okay, yeah. Good. So yeah, he carried that bag around with him forever, knowing that we were going to look through it. And one time he forgot it and we looked in it and saw what it was. And I instantly became so happy that I didn't find it, because obviously anyone would play it on Chris. As soon as I knew what it was, I knew he was going to play it on Chris. I knew that I would have had the choice of betraying Chris by playing it on him or being an idiot and not playing it on him. And I don't know what I would have done, because I was so mixed up emotionally with Chris. So I was really happy Keith had it. But as soon as Aubrey and Chris and I looked in his bag and found out what it was, we basically looked at Chris and said, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good for you.
Rick, how were you feeling about the challenge when you first saw it?
I felt really good about it. I certainly didn't look at it and go, oh man, I'm going to beat all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked at it and said, there's no reason I can't win this challenge. I felt like I had done really solid in all the group challenges, mm-hmm. even though the team had won. So I felt, I was feeling confident. And yeah, when I looked at it, I really thought I could do it. Yeah.
How many immunity challenges did you end up winning?
Four.
Four. Four
immunity plus the edge of extinction.
This, right?
Yeah. Yep. So five individual challenges.
I mean, that's really amazing.
But who's counting?
Did you think that you would do so well in the challenges coming into this thing?
No, not at all. I mean, I hoped I'd win a challenge. I think everyone hopes you'd win a challenge, and I thought I'd be fine in like the group challenges. Like I have a unique skill set. Like I'm not one of those, like I don't go to the workout a bunch, but I do work out. Like I play basketball all the time. And I think a lot of guys you see on Survivor that have great muscles, but don't use them for things. I'm like the opposite. I don't have great muscles, but the muscles I have, I use to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And I think that that just really worked out. And I never saw myself as great at puzzles, but I really was able to, I mean, I just did well at the puzzles.
Well, that's ideal for Survivor. I think that that you want to be able to be somewhat athletic and maybe not have the imposing physique, as opposed to people who have the imposing physique. I'm not naming anybody from your season, but might not be as good in the challenges.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're talking about Joe, but he did his best at challenges. And that was my strategy. I mean, at the very beginning, the pregame interviews, I said, you know, I want to get in with some of these young, strong guys and just slip on by because of who I am. And that's what I thought David Wright was, was that young, strong guy that I was going to hide behind.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that in the show that you said you wanted to, you know, play with the big guys, and maybe that's who David Wright turned out to be. So, all right, you win this challenge to get back into the game. Can you just you describe what that felt like?
That was a really emotional moment. Like the first thing I thought was like, you know, my son Jack is going to see this. Specifically Jack, because my daughter was so young then. And then just everyone else that I was with on the edge, it's like they were so heartbroken because they thought their adventure was over, and yet they were genuinely happy for me. It was just a really emotional, thing. And then like the realization that I'm back in the game, this game on, and then it's like a whole new thing. That's imposing.
Okay, so this is now a very wild time in the game, because we're gonna get to the merge. Yes,
I'm sorry, can I add in two quick stories?
Sure.
One, when Jeff brought us in to do the Edge of Extinction challenge and everyone's watching, he says, does anyone here think that this is unfair? And I'm the only one who raised my hand. And then I felt bad about it.
Unfair just, in what way? Unfair that you guys were coming
back
into the game?
Just that someone could come back into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm the only one who raised my hand. And so I think it's a little unfair. So I felt justified when I won my way back in. It's like, okay, well, you guys are obviously okay with this.
Mm-hmm.
But a more important story. So Ron Clark has heard through the grapevine during this that I'm a morning news anchor in Georgia.
Yes.
So he is not telling anyone who he is. And he's very nervous that I'm going to know who he is right away. So I don't know who he is. I should have, but I don't. So Aubrey comes to the Edge of Extinction, and she's so high on Ron. Like, Ron's the nicest guy. You're going to love Ron. So as soon as I win my way back in from Edge of Extinction, I go right up to Ron and say, hey, Ron, I've heard such good things. And then we're shut down. We can't talk for the whole ride back to our island. And Ron is freaking out.
Yeah.
Thinking that I know his secret and I'm about to blab it to everybody right at the merge. And then, of course, we get back into camp, and like 2 seconds in, I'm like, oh, yeah, Aubrey says you're so great and that you dance and sing, and he knows he's safe. But he was terrified.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is wild that nobody did seem to know who Ron was, considering that he's a pretty well-renowned figure.
It really is. I think if any teachers were out there, they definitely would have known.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us were more Joey fans than Chandler fans, which is why it just didn't pop into our mind.
Not Joey Amazing?
I'm a Joey Amazing fan, too. Even though our one vote in the game together, he tried to get rid of me.
Okay, so this is when, we have this merge, and you know, in watching this stuff back, I feel like that these first couple of votes after the merge are all really wild and exciting in terms of just there's so much gameplay happening on these first couple of votes after the merge. And so we end up with that you come back And this was, you know, a point of contention of, you know, what is your desire of where do you want to go after you get back from the merge?
So when I come back into the game, my assumption is that these Lasso that really didn't want to get rid of me in the first place are going to be ecstatic to have me back in with them as a number. You know, I left my sweater. I love them. We all love each other. So I think that they want me back. I also come in kind of with the freedom of going, as much as I love them, they did vote me off. So I can be a free agent if I want to. But obviously, David's my closest ally in the game. He wants to stick with those Lasso. So that's the plan. So even though I'm approached by Common, I'm saying, hey, listen, you know, I'm doing whatever. I'm planning on sticking with Lasso. And then Ron and Eric and Julie come to me all together and say, listen, you know, they say, listen, we're parents just like you. Ron says we're Georgia. And they say, basically, your Lasso, particularly Lauren and Kelly, are trying to get rid of you right away.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason that they would they had the numbers. So there's no reason that they would tell me this if they didn't want to save me. And there's really, I didn't get the vibe that they were the type of people that would bring their kids into it just to kind of mess with me. So I believe this right away. And they, you know, I don't really know what's true. I saw what I saw on the show, but they sell it as like, they're really being kind of harsh about it. Like they don't care at all. Like they really want you gone. So this hurts my feelings for mm-hmm. sure. Like I thought we were tighter than that. You saw on the show, like I am a little bit of an emotional guy. I have feelings. I'm a modern man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm right away going,
you're not worried about Eric's friends making fun
right,
of you.
Exactly. Maybe a little bit. So I go to David and kind of tell him this, and he's like, yeah, that totally checks out with him. So David and I go from our plan A, which was, hey, maybe we can get Joe and Aurora to come over with the Lasso and be with us, which is what I had talked to Joe about once, and I think David had. We start going, okay, we need to get in with this Comma. And that's a little tricky because Comma doesn't need our votes for what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see, they did that like really clever split where they had us all shooting against each other.
Yeah.
So they say, you know, we're not going to tell you who to vote for because we don't know that we can trust you yet. They're afraid we're going to go running back to whoever. So I say, okay, well, I'm guessing who they're going to vote for. I say, okay, well, we'll vote for Kelly. And they say, okay, go ahead. And obviously they had Joe in mind. So they got rid of Joe, but they had us target Kelly, which was very smart on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my perspective of the Joe list. And after that, like, you know, when we got back to camp, Kelly and Lauren were so visibly upset that Joe was gone and I was still here.
Yeah.
And I just really took that to heart. And that was the end of it for me.
So it looked like on the episode, it was Julie who seemed the most sympathetic to your plight in terms of that you had gone to the edge of extinction and that there was some talk to send you back. Do you feel like was that strategy on her part, do you feel? Or do you think that she genuinely felt like that was a not such a great thing to do to you?
I think it was both. I think that definitely emotionally, she did not want that to happen to me. I mean, she's such a kind person. But I think strategically, she was definitely trying to set up possibilities for her and Ron and Eric down the road. I think all three of those very specifically wanted to be the Comma people that talked to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they even made that known to the younger Comma, like, hey, we'll handle Rick and David. And that might be what led, or not what led, but that might have fed into that, them turning on Eric and Ron and Julie earlier, is the fact that those were the ones definitely handling me. You know, those were my handlers within Comma. So there was definitely strategy involved, but I definitely feel like even Vic, who is the strategic person, not get emotions involved at all, said at Tribal, like, that's kind of messed up. And within Survivor, it's totally acceptable, but I appreciated that they found it kind of messed up and kept me around.
Okay, so they ultimately vote out Joe, that it looked like at one point it was going to be Kelly, and then they end up switching it around to Joe. And so this next vote afterwards, this vote against Eric ends up setting so much stuff into motion. And this was such an interesting episode for you, because I think that you have to feel like that you are pretty secure about your position here, and that you have now flipped sides, and now you and David, or seemingly you and David, are going to move forward with Kama. But there's a disconnect between you and David Wright in at this point in time about which way to go. And I think it's interesting that for whatever reason, David Wright feels like, hey, this is not the right decision to go. And this is when you guys are having all of those great conversations about who is drunk. This is
my way is better for me. You're not hitting numbers, bro. I think you're dreaming. I think you're getting played.
I told my wife, Becca, I said, I don't think I've ever talked like that any other time in my life. And she said, oh no, you do that a lot. So, oh, my fault.
Yeah. And so, now, hindsight being what it is, and of course, you know, you go really far into the game, so everything works out. But do you have any more clarity about this? This was a question that we got from one of our listeners of who was drunk during that vote. Was it you or was it David Wright?
David and I were talking about this just 2 weeks ago at Chris's wedding, actually, in Greenville. I don't know that we agree on who was drunk yet, because this was the same vote that I had my outburst with Wardog. Are we going to get to that, or should I throw that in here?
I mean, it's all part of this one vote. Where
so, yeah. What I
do you
want
to hear that clip? Do you want to go? Do you want to go back to that?
Yeah. How about I start with that and then work to David?
Okay. So this is when you are talking with Wardog about what to do on the vote, and then we hear this.
Five old Lesu good together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm dying to get back with the old Lesu.
Look,
I know now that I know that I can trust you guys. I really want to get back with you all.
You
don't want to get back with you guys at all. Why would I work with you guys?
Well, I mean,
you guys stabbed me in the back over and over again. What? I don't want to work with Kelly at all. So, she's trying to vote me out twice. Like,
I mean, you come here for ninth or eighth, then that's fine.
Okay, so
let's talk regrets.
Yeah.
I definitely should not have been emotional about the conversation. Like, it was the wrong way to play it, even though I also enjoy watching it. In hindsight, I should have just said, yeah, absolutely, Wardog. Yeah, absolutely. And then gone and worked with David and done whatever, you know, I or we wanted. But I absolutely stand by not going back to old Lesu.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been insanity to go back to this group of five people who I know I'm at the bottom of. I mean, they've proved that twice. So I don't know what my best case scenario could have been there. And this is what I was trying to describe to David. This is where we came to terms. So he wanted to kind of stick with that Lesu group. And then who were we bringing in? Aurora?
Mm-hmm.
That would have been the idea, the original Lesu and Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
So their best case scenario, that's 3-3, or when that comma breaks down, we try to bring people over, but we already kind of see Kelly and Lauren getting closer with, you know, the Julias and the Gavins.
And also, I think that part of it was, I think there's 12 people left in the game, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Wardog's plan was that we bring in Aurora and then go to Rox.
Right. So they want me to go to Rox with the people that tried to vote me out for a second time,
mm-hmm.
where I can look at Kama, and I just kept telling David, like, this Kama group is so big. Clearly, they're going to turn against each other and we'll be there to pick up the pieces. That was my idea, that this Kama group, by the time they get rid of Kelly and Lauren and Wardog, are going to be so ready to turn on each other that David and I can pick our side. I just did not realize that they were going to turn on each other immediately. that night, I couldn't believe how quickly Kama wanted to turn on each other.
Yeah.
And that threw everything up into the air. And even that night at Tribal, David had agreed to vote with me going into Tribal. And we were going to vote with the Kama folk. And during Tribal, we read the vibe and knew it was going to be Eric. And he kind of looked at me and said, "You got to vote Eric. You have to vote Eric." And I said, "No, I'm not going to," because I had promised Eric. And I was on the, you know, I was all messed up emotionally from Edge of Extinction. Yeah. I wasn't going to turn on him.
Yeah. And there's so much going on at this point in the game right now. So you've come back with this idol. You had to give half of it to somebody. You give it to David Wright. And now you and David Wright aren't on the same page. And you're asking for your half of the idol. And he says, "You know, I think I'm going to hold on to it right now." I mean, did you want to strangle him? How did you not start like, "Hey, I gave you that to you. You got it. Now you got to give it back to me." That was the deal.
Luckily, I had already had one emotional outburst with War Dog, so I felt like I'd hit my limit for the day.
What do you mean you're not giving it back to me?
It was a little annoying. Like, I definitely, it would have been nice if he just handed it to me, but I saw where he was coming from, and there was never really any doubt in my mind that we were going to be together to work things out. Like, I just knew he trusted me way more than he trusted anybody else. And that he had reason to is another thing. So I had no doubt that if and when I needed that half of the idol, it would be there for me, and vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, just to flash forward to, you know, you're going to be on the receiving or the opposite side of this with Chris, with not giving it back to him. I just don't know how Chris doesn't strangle you where you don't give him the other half of the idol that he gave you.
Yeah, I mean, the way to do it, I guess, would be to say, "Hey, remember what David and I did where he gave me the half at Tribal?
Yeah.
You know, I'll do that for you tonight. I'll give you the half tonight."
And then just like chuck it into the forest at the Tribal
Council.
Yeah,
either chuck it in the fort or do what Ty did and just like sit there awkwardly and hope that Chris doesn't literally kill me before security can get out there. But again, like, if I could go back, I probably would, because I know how great Chris's structure is, but I could not do that.
Yeah, I guess you have to, but that's a really tough move.
It is. And again, I know how many people are upset that he got the idol coming in that late.
Yeah.
And I always have to remind people, like, that's a worthless idol if I don't give him that halfback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like he just had an idol. But that time on Extinction with me.
Yeah.
And the fact, you know, it would be really, really hard not to give that to him.
I mean, just to stay in this flash forward, I think that what you'd have to do is probably just vote him out at six, like go with the people that want to take Chris out, and then vote him out without him ever getting to reconstitute that idol.
Yeah, which Vic told me to do. And Vic said, like, wait, is that five or six?
Six.
Six is when Vic went.
Yeah.
Yeah, she told me. She said, "You know, this is your chance to get rid of Chris. And basically, if I don't, I'll regret it."
Mm-hmm.
And I even said, "You know, listen, there's no way I can vote against Chris." And she came up with a way where I wouldn't have to vote against him. But in my mind, you know, that's just semantics. It'd still be me betraying him. So I didn't do it. But Vic, you know, strategic mastermind, she told me what to do. And she was right.
Yeah.
And I knew she was right in that context. I just really underestimated the chance that Chris had to, within the jury's eyes.
Okay.
I really misplayed that.
So this is also going to be the Pilots and Passengers Tribal Council, where Eric gets voted out, where David first puts that out there. And I was thinking about this when I was watching these episodes, that did Pilots and Passengers, did that really, did David Wright incept people with that Pilots and Passengers stuff, where it doesn't work out for David Wright, but ultimately, does it end up working against Gavin at the final Tribal Council, where was Gavin seen more as the a passenger in the eyes of the jury after this had been drilled, Pilots and Passengers, so much into the minds of the jury?
I don't think that there's any doubt that that Pilots and Passengers talk going forward really played a perception on how everyone viewed everyone in the game. Because nobody wanted to be a passenger. I mean, you heard how derisively it was said, like how you think about passengers. You know, you're such a passenger.
You're such a passenger, Rick.
Right, exactly. Like, no one wants to be that. So then it's like, well, I have to show them I'm a pilot. But then if you're, you know, if you show you're a pilot, you're getting taken out. I mean, the whole game, if you just look at it, is just threats. I mean, there's a lot of strategy happening, but if you just look at like the boot order and you just take out immunity, like when they could have gotten rid of me, it's like, there's nothing scientific about it. It's literally the biggest threats were taken out in perfect. It's like, what's complicated about that? You just looked around and said, oh, that's the biggest threat. Guys, we can all agree on that, right? And then booted them.
Yeah. And I do think that
so
was...
I think that's a hard story to sell to Final Tribal.
Yeah.
It's like, I was in this group that got rid of everybody.
Yeah. What if you're like, well, yeah, I didn't fly the plane. I chartered the plane. What does it matter who was flying it?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I got us here.
And it's like, yeah. But you guys were passengers too. And I'm the one that gave you pretzels and Coke. Doesn't that count for anything?
Yeah. You gotta really pick apart the metaphor.
He was just occupying the bathroom when you really needed to go.
So ultimately, Eric is going to get voted out. You vote the wrong way here. That what you don't realize seemingly is that War Dog puts a War Dog seed into Julia and Gavin's mind, and then they end up making this flip to take out Eric, and now you put your lot in with Kama, and now Kama has split in half.
Yes. And I should say, I think I made it sound earlier like I wasn't surprised by the Eric vote because David was trying to flip me over during the vote. Mm-hmm. I was still surprised they were able to get the numbers. Like, I was surprised. I wanted to stay loyal to Eric, but that was a really impressive job, in my opinion, by War Dog getting those numbers. And David definitely read the room correctly and flipped over, although I think he hurt us by flipping over because we never got that trust back with Ron and Julie.
Yeah.
Because he was on the other side of the Eric vote.
Yeah. And then we have this episode. And look, for a season that people feel like, okay, well, the strategy wasn't always there when you talk about the Edge of Extinction as a season overall. But these first votes at the merge are, you know, this is really heavy stuff, especially when we're going to get to then this live tribal council where Julia ends up going home.
Yeah. That was a weird day leading up to that tribal.
Right, because it was just one day.
Yeah, it came really quickly. And then Gavin won the immunity necklace.
Yeah.
And it was so clear in camp that everyone wanted to be on a date. The power structure that day was Julia, Victoria, Gavin, Aurora.
Yes.
Is that it? Was that it? The four there?
Oh, well, yeah, it depends.
I feel like I'm missing somebody.
Yeah, you would know better than me.
Yeah, I think that power structure was the four. And then Julie and Ron were kind of a twosome.
Right.
David and I were a twosome. And then there was the Lesu three.
Yeah.
So all day, everyone's trying to get in on the good side of that four. And they are really giving David and I the cold shoulder. Like, we keep saying, we'll work with you. And they say, yeah, we'll get back to you with who to vote on.
Because Gavin really wanted David, right?
I think so. So... And David and I are saying, listen, you got to break up this Lesu 3. They're the only ones with numbers to rival you guys. Why wouldn't you break up them?
Yeah.
We're just two. So all day we're trying to get them to work with us, and they're kind of playing out the clock to the point where we're going, obviously they're not working with us. They're working with the others. So then
– But which others?
Julie with Lesu.
Yeah.
So we think those four are working with the Lesu 3. And then right before Tribal, Julie comes running all the way along the outside of the beach to get secretly to David and I. And she is freaking out. And she is so scared that they're going to vote off Ron. And we say, okay, well, what do you want us to do? And she says, I want to vote off Julie tonight. And so David and I say, okay, you know, we're in on it. We'll vote off Julie with you. But we never have or we'll vote off Julia with Julie.
Yeah.
But we never have a chance to tell Ron about this before Tribal. So David and I decide we're definitely playing our idol, and we're definitely playing it on David unless something changes, because both of us felt strongly they were going to get rid of David.
Yeah. But meanwhile, then Kama has gotten back together, and it's seemingly they are going to vote off Kelly. Is that correct?
I still don't even know.
Yeah. Because I think that's what's so fascinating about this tribal council is that you do really great work to destabilize this. But I do wonder, would it have been better for you if the Kama plan, again, you get to fourth place, so better to you is very, but maybe you don't have to find as many idols along the way. But
yeah, if Kelly had gone home,
would that have changed the whole dynamic? Especially, it would have been better for David, who is going to end up going out right after this. But if Kelly had gone home, if the Kama plan had stayed together,
it's quite possible. I mean, I think that probably is what would have happened. Kelly would have gone home, which makes me just wonder, like, why wouldn't Gavin or somebody come and throw me a bone and just kind of put that in our ear?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they still thought David and Kelly might have something under the table. But basically, like, I got to tribal and I saw how uncomfortable the Lesu three were,
mm-hmm,
and Julie and Ron were, and knew that all of us were on the outside of it. And
yeah,
that's when I realized we could flip things around.
Because I think that what happened was that the Kama people that voted against Eric, specifically Julia and Gavin and Aurora and Victoria, I just think that they had too much going on where that they didn't want to spook Kelly, but I think then they didn't do enough to not spook Julie, and the whole thing just turned into a mess.
Right. None of us were comforted enough.
Yeah.
And that was real clear in tribal. And the more that, you know, Julia and Aurora kind of talked, I could see people trying to process it and just not feeling good about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I kind of blew things up. And as I was blowing it up, I could see War Dog, who, even though strategically we had blown up, but we were always really tight and good friends, I could see him really excited to jump in on this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when we just kind of took it. And I leaned over to David and said, hey, you need to talk to Kelly and Lauren because they're not going to want to talk to me. And that's when I went over to talk to Julia to Julie and Ron, because I'd been close with them and was the only one who hadn't betrayed them on the Eric vote. And then War Dog did a great job of convincing them to get in on it, and it just went crazy. Oh, and then the idol. I can talk about our idol play.
Yes.
So Kelly was still real up in the air about what she was going to do. And so I forget how it came up, but I basically told Kelly that we had an idol and we were going to play it tonight. So that she should. To urge her to hop on board to us, because that takes one more option for them to vote out with. And she got on board, and basically, after I had told her that we were going to play the idol, we had to play the idol.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we didn't feel real uncomfortable, David did want me to still play it. I felt like it was definitely going to be Julia after everything blew up. But we had used it as a negotiating thing, so we basically had to play it at that point.
This is also the tribal council that was famous for this.
This morning, in the water, I spotted this huge school of minnows. But eventually a shark came through and ate a bunch of them. And tonight, with the reconstituted Kama, it's likely that one of the Lesu is a minnow.
Did that really happen?
Yeah. I was taking a poop, but yeah.
Devin, now we have a new analogy, thanks to David. Where are you? You a minnow or a shark?
I might be the poop.
Yeah. And then I would go on to read on Reddit many times, Rick Devins is the poop.
I'm the poop. Went from the Kool-Aid man to the poop. I think that's a downgrade.
We had a lot of fun with that and with this.
You're such a passenger, Rick.
such a passenger.
And I got to say, I had never seen that frustrated Julia in the game, and I have not seen her since. Like, she is so cool as a cucumber, and she's very much the Dr. Julia that she's becoming.
Yes.
So I was When she threw that at me, it was like a slap, man. I did not see it coming.
Yeah, well, you weren't the only one that got it.
And I was throwing fire at her, too. Yeah. Yeah, like when she said that to War Dog, I'm like, Julia, that's rude. You know, I mean, I had it coming. She's all good.
Yeah. But that was a really wild scene that took place with ultimately Julia getting voted out.
And it was even more, I mean, we were there for a long time going back and forth. It was, and you hear things like Ron saying, how about Victoria? Right in front of Victoria. it was amazing. It was a lot of fun to be there.
Okay, so here's something that I really want to get into with you, because I was so convinced that I knew where the game was going after this Julia Tribal Council, and I felt like, okay, Lesu is back together on the same page, that they figured it out. War Dog is so happy with Rick Devins, and now David and Kelly are back on the same page. Away we go. Goodbye, comma. And we end up with the next episode starts with, hey, there's a new six, and it's the Lesu three plus what, Gavin, Julie, and Ron. Is that right?
Yes, I think so.
How did that happen? How did we go from everybody vote out Julia to you and David are still not back with Lesu?
It was kind of funny because I don't think I ever intended to get back with Lesu, and I don't think Lesu ever intended to get back with me, even though after that tribal, there was kind of, I mean, they made that deal with Gavin and Ron and Julie that night, as you could see. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, I do remember meeting with Lauren and Kelly around the well, it was so funny because it was a conversation where it was so clear that they knew I was lying, and I so clearly knew that they were lying, but we all just kind of ran through it of like, yeah, maybe we can, you know, maybe we're back now. But it just wasn't going to happen. So I thought Ron and Julie would obviously want to come with me because I'd been with them every vote, no problem, where these others had turned on them a couple different times. So I thought if we can get David and I and Ron and Julie and Victoria, then that's a real solid five. If we pretend like we're going to Rocks, there's no way that some of those folks are going to go to Rocks for each other. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was our way forward. But Victoria is not a go to Rocks. And I say this in a very positive way.
Yeah.
She's not going to Rocks for you. She's too smart for that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So she saw plenty of room over on that side. And Ron and Julie weren't going to. I think that they never really trusted David again after he voted Eric out. So he'd try to say loyalty is my brand, but they just wouldn't go for it, even though I think he would have been a great partner for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't about to leave David. So even though that night we knew it was one of us and I assumed it was David, we went into that tribal saying, we're just going to stand by each other and give it the best we got.
Yeah. And you guys are going for War Dog here. Why War Dog out of anybody?
We felt like War Dog, well, David and War Dog kind of had a little bit of a rivalry going. They'd kind of, I think, turned on each other a little bit after I'd been voted out in Lesu.
War Dog said David Wright is his nemesis.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that happened after I'd been voted out. And mm-hmm. they'd both kind of, it's like they saw what each other were doing, but were just kind of unable to get to each other. Like every time War Dog wanted David out, the others would convince him to come after me. So David wanted War Dog out for the same reasons. And I think War Dog was the easiest one we thought to convince, like, Ron and Julie to go after. We thought he would be easier for them to focus on getting out than Kelly or Lauren at that point.
Okay. So David Wright ends up going out in this first part of this double boot. Is there anything else that we're missing about the David Wright vote?
I don't think so. He and I knew, we definitely saw it coming. We were frustrated that we'd played the idol too early, and we were frustrated we couldn't get anyone to come onto our side. But yeah, I mean, I just can't say enough about David. He was so loyal to me to the game, and I really don't think we would have turned on each other. It would have been real crazy if we'd gotten to the end together.
Well,
sad to see him go.
That you could vote him out at 4 or 5. That was the deal you guys made.
Right. But we saw what a softy I am when it comes down to it. I couldn't do it to Chris. I'm sure I couldn't do it to David.
Yeah. Okay. So the next vote is going to be the Kelly Wentworth vote. And we see War Dog have these 30-second conversations. Yeah. That was it? That was all you talked to War Dog about this was 30 seconds? He wants to vote out Kelly and you were on board?
No. War Dog had first of all, when I got back from the David thing, like War Dog and I had a chance that night, just the two of us, to kind of talk. And I basically said, you know, because we, again, had always been really close. Like, we talked sports together, and I think War Dog is hilarious. I can listen to his, like, I was constantly listening to the War Dog podcast out there, basically. So I told him, I was like, listen, man, at some point you're going to need votes against, you know, Kelly and Lauren, and you know I'm down for it if you're here. And I think he had certainly reasons to believe that Gavin and Julie were getting real close with Lauren and Kelly.
Yeah.
So I think he saw them making plans to get him out. And basically, if he was right about that, and you'll have to ask them, then he had to get Kelly out when he did, or he wouldn't have been able to get her out at all. So I was all for getting rid of Kelly. So I remember waking up that morning, and literally I was all alone in camp. Every single other person was on the beach. And I thought, I'm totally screwed in this game. And then War Dog and I go to get tree mail, and he says, hey, how about we get rid of Kelly? And that's why I said, magic to my ears. Or music to my ears.
Either one. Both are good.
You know, I said a lot of bull crap out there.
Yeah.
And then, like, 2 minutes later, I found the idol in my bag. Or not the idol, but the advantage in my bag.
The advantage.
That morning got a lot better.
Which is going to ultimately lead to you having immunity on that vote, where you ended up getting the balls into the what would you call that? An oar?
The paddle.
Yeah, the paddle.
But I stand by. I think I would have won that no matter what, advantage or no.
Mm-hmm.
But Aurora says she was right on my tail, so it's a debate.
Okay, so. Did you had immunity, so you were safe no matter what, but were you feeling confident that vote was going to go through for Kelly Wentworth?
Yes. Once I was off the table, once they couldn't get rid of me, I felt like we would have the numbers to get rid of Kelly, because everyone, I mean, she was the last returnee in the game. She was just a big target. We didn't know she had the idol. At that point, I definitely assumed she didn't. Because I was like, she definitely had to have played it by now if she had it. There were so many tense moments. So I was pretty confident that we had her that night. Yeah. If she had played the idol that night, I would have been gobsmacked.
Yeah, were you shocked when you found out that she did have the idol?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I mean, her, Aubrey, and Lauren, I just couldn't believe it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aubrey, because I didn't find out till way after the game was over. Kelly, because... And Kelly and Lauren, same reason. There were so many times that I thought they were legitimately at risk that I definitely would have played it. But I'm a lot looser with it. I'll play it and go find another one is my thing.
Yeah.
Like, let's go look for another. But I was real surprised to find out that she had one.
All right. So Kelly is out. David and Kelly go back to back out in the game.
Oh, can I throw in a real quick Kelly story?
Go for it.
I lost my wedding ring during one of the challenges early in the game. My silicone, like the one I wore out there.
Right.
So I had no wedding ring. I was trying to do this twine. And Kelly and I, at this point, after the merge, like, we are not on the same wavelength tribe-wise. Like, she knows I'm not working with her. She has no reason, really, to do super nice things for me. And she makes me this leather wedding band that I still have that lasted me the whole game that my wife so appreciated that I had out there, because she's crazy enough to think people would be interested. So that's my I Love Kelly Wentworth shout out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kelly and David, well, that their stories were so intertwined in the season. That do you feel like if they could have gotten on the same page at any point, what would that have done to the entire game?
That would have been real interesting. If those two could have really gotten on the same page, I think that they could have gotten Lauren and I on board with that. Maybe not War Dog. I don't think he would have wanted to run with both of them. But those two are such great players. I think they could have been kind of a wrecking crew if right away they had gotten on the same page. Mm-hmm. Although if they'd done it right away, we would have voted them out.
Right.
If they'd done it, you know, after the Keith vote, if that had really solidified us, it could have been interesting. Even if Les Sue 5 had come back together at the very beginning of the merge, mm-hmm. and watched Comma fall apart. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, those two together, I mean, that's scary. That's real scary.
Okay. So after Kelly is gone, this is where it looks like that now you and Wardog are talking about things. And we have the conversation with you and Wardog and Ron talking about how, you know, it's the threats versus the goats. And I know that there was definitely a pushback about, you know, who the ultimate threats are. But if that could have stuck together, would that have been a better scenario for you moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you know, it's so funny that people are like, oh, Devins is so arrogant thinking he's a threat when he got voted out and came back in. But our perception in the game is what we knew of the jury. And we knew that the jury liked me and thought I was playing a good game. Like, we knew that they were respecting big games. And so our perception was that Wardog and Ron and I were the big threats at that moment. And that perception is true based on talking to the jury now. So I think it was integral that we stick together. If we had been able to get them to vote someone other than Wardog off that first vote, we might have been able to change the tenor of the game. Because, again, it goes back to just Joe, you know, Eric, Julia, David, Kelly. I mean, there was nothing scientific about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest threat is going to get out. So that was what I was trying to implore to them that morning. And Wardog was definitely on board. But I guess Ron just felt like he was close enough to the others. And he was closer to them than Wardog and I were, I think. Those younger commas of Vic and Gavin, strategically. We were all close personally. But yeah, I mean, it was so obvious that the group that was not perceived at threats was just going to keep doing what they'd been doing the last several votes, which is get rid of the biggest threat,
mm-hmm.
that I thought we had to come together to even have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't think anyone was going to go on a challenge, an immunity idol run. Certainly not me. I hadn't found a single idol at that point.
Yeah,
I'd
not
won
even
one challenge.
Yet. Which is wild because we're pretty far into the season and you haven't found an idol yet. But
right.
You are going to go and win the immunity for the second vote in a row. And that's when we hear this.
Lachaserie!
Shout out to Tony Kornheiser.
You know, I had not mentioned this, but our RHAP t-shirt designer, Brian Malloy, actually made up a Lachaserie shirt at that point in time in the season in RHAPstore.com. Did you know about this?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Yes, at RHAPstore.com, he did make up a RHAP Bell Lachaserie shirt. And I'd like to send one to you and to Becca that for inspiring Brian Malloy's design.
Outstanding. We will wear those with pride.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
So yeah, it's the bell is made out of cheese in Lachaserie.
Wow. Sia's gift was good, but this,
yeah,
Rob,
it might be better.
this is the greatest thing we've ever received.
Yeah. I had asked you when I saw you at the finale, did Tony Kornheiser make a big deal that you got one of his catchphrases out there?
He didn't make as big a deal out of it as he should have because he doesn't watch the show.
Yes.
If I had said it in a golf tournament that like three people watched, he would have let his show with it.
Yeah.
But he left it to his emailers to celebrate the Survivor Lachaserie.
Okay. Well, it was a victory for all of Kornheiser Nation.
Yeah, exactly. All the littles, which is what we call. Oh, man, this is so nerdy.
Okay.
Next time I'm gonna yell wiggle room.
Yes. And no, we would celebrate that. Well, go to a golf tournament also if you yell out wiggle room right when somebody is taking a tee shot.
Devin's wins immunity. Survivor, no win-alls.
Yeah, Wanda.
Yeah.
Any of those. Perfect. All good. Okay, so War Dog goes out, and now you are really, you know, no options at this point, but Ron Clark gives you an advantage menu.
Yes. Right after that thing. So I'm so annoyed with Ron because he stabbed me in the back again. And then he hands me this menu, and I have such weird emotions about it because the first thing you think is, like, this is a legit thing. Like, it's on paper, and it's written in ink. So this is real. And then after you have just a little bit of time to think about it, you're going, this makes no sense at all. Why would he ever give this to me? Like, I know he doesn't feel this comfortable in the game. So it just kind of eats at you and eats at you. And I remember the first thing I did was I went to the producers and I said, I'd like to order the idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were like, what? I was like, off the menu, I want to order the idol. And they're like, no, that's not how it works, Rick. That's
yeah.
That is the thing. I was like, oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. So were you 50% that maybe it was a real thing, or had you sort of convinced yourself that this is Fugazi?
By the time that Tribal came around, I was 90% sure that it was fake.
Mm-hmm.
But with that 10% of not being sure, it's like Ron is literally the only person even pretending to work with me.
Yeah.
And I want Aurora. If I could get anyone out in the game right now, it's Aurora. Because I feel like I have to win challenges to get to the end. And she's by far what I see as my biggest challenge threat. So I'm like, okay, if Ron's lying to me, then fine, I play my thing. And in my thought, Aurora goes out anyway. That's what I want. And I make this big well, we'll get to that. But if Ron's not lying to me, then okay, the thing works and that's awesome. And I'm getting Aurora out, and I'm staying true to Ron so we can move forward together.
Mm-hmm.
But I was 90% sure it was fake, which is why I came up with my whole speech.
Yeah. And so also at this point in the game, Aurora ends up going through your bag. But this was pre you finding the idol. But I almost feel like that was like a good thing for you, where I know that they put the votes on you, but there was definitely like they had enough suspicion to think that, you know, they need to have a backup plan.
Right. It definitely, I think I started spending so much time looking for the idol at that point because I had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
That I was just 24/7 out there looking for it. So, yeah, and of course I had to make a big stink out of them looking through my bag, even though I'd looked through Keith's bag, just to try to get the target on someone else. And at that point, I felt like the easiest people I could hopefully get the target on would be Aurora, because she has 2 immunity challenge wins, just like I do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, well, maybe I can get them to turn against her. But I knew that wasn't realistic, because if everyone is sitting around while someone's going through your bag, then everyone's going through your bag. It's not...
Right.
You know, that hard to figure out.
So can you talk a little bit about how you were able to climb to the top of the shelter while everybody was sleeping? Because that, you know, I know that there were people that got on you about finding the idols, but this was like not a cheapie at all to be able to wake up in the middle of the night. You're like a cat burglar where you know, it's not like that you are just stumbling across this thing. You
right.
had to wake up when nobody else knew, and then like climb to the top of the shelter that everybody sleeps in, this creaky, rickety, you know, bamboo structure, and then end up pulling down this idol.
Yeah, it's legit. And I put a lot of time, like, how can I get this without people seeing me? Because camp is never empty. And I mean, you see later in the show, you know, that Lauren has a different strategy for getting it and gets caught. Like, we see her getting it. So really, the only way I could think of doing it was I need to climb up in the middle of the night. So I take off my glasses, I cover up my belt, anything shiny, and I go ninja mode. and it literally is the middle of the night, and I walk out of camp one way, like I'm going to use the bathroom just in case someone's up. Then I go all the way around in the woods and come back in a different way, and just very quietly shimmy up, because that branch is what's holding up our whole structure,
mm-hmm.
like the bamboo's connected. So if it shakes, the whole structure shakes. And then, of course, I get my belt stuck like an idiot, and I'm trying to get unstuck. And every noise I make seems like, in my head, the loudest noise in the world. But when I finally got it, I just, like, shimmied off and then walked out of camp and then sprinted to the other side of the island and just started celebrating.
And nobody, like, looked at you or rolled over?
Nobody, I think. I didn't see anybody moving. And nobody has ever claimed to have any idea that happened. So
it's amazing.
I think I got away scot-free. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also went back and hit it up there scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
My fake, I hit up there without anyone seeing, but I skimped. I did the same thing climbing the tree, but I did it in the daytime when it was just Aurora, Julie, and I left during a reward.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to ultimately get to this tribal council where you're going to play the advantage menu and then come back around and make this speech in front of everybody. And this speech was you had rehearsed this of what you were going to say?
Yes, this is something I'd rehearsed all day because I thought, again, I did not know Ron was going home. They did not leave me in on that. I know a lot of people think I tried to steal credit at Tribal, but it's literally, I was just so surprised and my adrenaline was running. So I thought that Aurora was going to end up going home when I played my real idol. But I wanted to start that Ron versus Rick war. I wanted to throw the first punch in front of the jury and in front of the other folks at camp so that hopefully when we went back, you know, they'd be like, wow, Ron's such a villain. You know, I got to team up with Rick. So then I do that whole thing and it plays out exactly how I want. The jury loves it at this point. And I know,
except
I know how boring it is being a juror on Edge of Extinction. So I'm really trying to entertain these folks as much as possible now that I know I can't get rid of the threat label no matter what. And then I realized that they're voting him out behind my back. And I'm like, oh, so excited. This is the best thing ever. And then Ron turns around and says, I love you, Devins. And it all just kind of hits me like, oh my gosh, I went way too hard on this guy. And I feel so bad. That's why I say, I love you, Ron. Because I do love Ron. And what he did was not bad at all. Like I actually wasn't offended or upset at all that he would play this idol. I think it's really clever the way he cut off the bottom of it.
Yeah.
But it was too late at that point. I mean, that ship had sailed. And of course, Julie the next day and I are right already. I went up to her and was like, hey, that was a little harsh. So we're back together again, working on the same side.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was just a wild tribal council where then you played your idol, but then Ron ends up going home, even though you were one of the votes for Aurora. That I saw in the Ponderosa, you tell Ron, like, Ron, I didn't know like that you were going home that night.
I really didn't. I felt so bad for it because the Ron you see in his confessionals, that villain Ron, you know, we never saw him. Mm-hmm. We only saw really nice, fun, sweet Ron.
Yeah.
Who was playing a hard game. So yeah, I did feel bad about it.
Now, also in this round was the family visit. And a lot of people wanted to know, were you actually trying to win the family reward? Or were you just trying to make the most of talking to Becca while you guys were playing in the challenge?
We were definitely not trying to win the family reward. Mm-hmm. We had discussed before ever going out there that Becca, if you come out for the family reward, we're going to throw it. If we had had a chance when she came out, I might have said, hey, there's really no reason to throw it. They want to get rid of me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so we had decided to throw it. And I actually told her after it was over and we knew we didn't win, I said, hey, if they don't pick us for this, I'm going back to camp and I'm going to find an idol.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened.
Okay. So now Ron is gone and
I did not mean to hit her in the face with the water. I blame her for where she held the bucket.
That was her fault.
If I'd been gone a week, I might have tried to hit her in the face with the bucket, but I was gone for long enough that I was not trying to hit my beautiful wife in the face with water.
Right. Okay. So now Ron is gone, and this is where we're going to have the vote that goes against Aurora. And now you are going to end up finding another idol this round, but then you also are going to win immunity. And so there is some talk about what are you guys going to do now that Julie is back on your side. Were you ever considering actually playing the hidden immunity idol on Julie?
I was not. I went to Julie and I said, listen, I've got this idol. I'm not even going to tell you if it's real or fake. And I told her everything I was going to do, everything I was going to say. And I said, but listen, I'm not really going to play it on you. Like, I let her know it's not going to happen. But just to, you know, go all in with me, and it's the best shot we got.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that it was. You know, I didn't accept that I wasn't the reason for that vote till about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. You thought you were even better.
After talking to everybody, I'm like, okay, I finally accept that you guys really did decide this before I went in there.
Did you know Julie was going to go and try to round up more votes like Lauren?
I did. I knew that she was going to try. But they just seemed so solid. And I thought they were silly not to keep Aurora because, I mean, Aurora got ditched on that reward and got sent back to camp with us and would not give an inch, like would not even consider teaming up with us even after being left from the reward. Plus, she's like the best chance of them knocking me off in these challenges, it seems like, because we keep getting kind of top two in them. So I thought, why would they get rid of Aurora? Unless they were being urged otherwise. And what I did at Tribal was a little more clever than what they ended up showing, and it explains why Aurora said reverse psychology.
Mm-hmm.
It made it look like I said, we're going to vote for any of you. But what we actually did is I said, I have immunity. I'm going to play immunity for Julia. And then Julie. She'll kill me. I'm going to play the idol for Julie, and we're not voting for Aurora. I said, we're voting for one of you three.
Mm-hmm.
So basically making them gamble their own game, not Aurora's game.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, you know, I was really pressuring them and then tricking them by voting Aurora. But yeah, now I accept that they'd already decided that. But, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that Aurora turns around and gives me credit and Julie turned right around and said, thank you. And in my mind, I was doing all this to save Julie. It's like, yeah, I thought I had done something.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where at home we're seeing a little bit more, but it's very hard for the jury to be able to make that distinction. So it ends up playing in your favor a lot.
Absolutely, especially if they're already, you know, in the back of their minds wanting me to get credit for things,
mm-hmm.
then I'm sure, you know, it's even easier for them to give me credit for those big moves. And that was, in hindsight, like maybe that is a point in the game where someone wants to start stepping up and saying, hey, you know, we're making moves too. But I think maybe they all just wanted to get rid of me first and then worry about all that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. We talked about it a lot at the time where we had said that, you know, they got to call your bluff there on that you have that idol and no way you're playing it on Julie.
Right, right. But no, like, I mean, if anything, they kind of played into it a little bit because they did, you know, they did say it could be fake. You know, it might not be real, but they also said, yeah, it makes you think, yeah, it could be real. And it's like, okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
well, that's exactly what I want. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to lose there. It's like, okay, either way, I have it for next week. And it actually worked out even better because they were so convinced it was fake going into the next tribal that they were surprised all over again, which, you know, again, the jury enjoyed.
Okay.
The jury loves it when they get surprised.
So We're going to get to now the action from the finale. And now here comes somebody back from the edge of extinction. Did you have any thoughts about who you were really hoping to see or really hoping not to see?
I was really hoping to see Chris or David.
Okay.
Chris or David is who I really wanted to see come back. On a personal level, I would have loved to see Aurora come right back because even though she wanted to get rid of me so bad, like we'd become really close in a weird way. And I think if she had come right back, maybe we would have worked together. But I don't know. But I was kind of like part of my heart was for Aurora that day in a weird way. And Eric. Eric was probably the other person. Those four. But definitely Chris was one of my top two for sure.
Okay.
Because I thought he got out so long ago that he has no chance of winning. But he's like one of my great buds out here. He might just come in here and help me finish these guys off.
And it looks like that that's where this thing is going when Chris comes back, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, he comes in and gives his little speech of like, oh, I don't want to do this. Oh, you know, I'm just here. And literally we go down to the beach and I say, I hope you're here to play. Like, I've got plans. And he basically says, yeah, I've got plans too. And it's on. Like, I mean, we're ready to roll.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So it ends up where that Julie ends up winning that immunity challenge with the help of Chris. And you were visibly annoyed about this.
Oh, man. I was so... First of all, I stunk at that challenge so bad. Like, I could only get pieces together looking at Julie's puzzle for some reason. And she killed it. And she didn't need Chris's help, but I was definitely like, yeah, it became very clear that he was playing both sides of the fence, that he had other stuff going on. And I was annoyed with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What were you hoping to have happen, that either he would win the reward and Julie would lose?
Well, I was hoping that I would win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had a better chance of it if he wasn't helping Julie for sure. So if anything, just like keep your mouth shut and I'll let me do this. but yeah, I saw him as my ally at that point. I just wanted him working as hard as I was out there, especially since I'm holding part of his idol. It's like, dude, if you want this back, you're going to have to contribute. If you want me to make sure that you stay safe by giving this back, you're going to have to make sure I stay safe by either we need to win these immunities or we need to find idols.
Okay, so you're left back at camp, and this is where you're having that conversation with, Victoria and Gavin is there with you?
Yes, yes. To take us in the back in time real quick, Victoria is someone that I always really enjoyed in the game. Like, she's so funny, and we're both obsessed with our pets. But I didn't have much of a sense of her game, and one day, I had been practicing fire making for like the whole last week of the game. And I would sneak off to do it. And one day I grab the machete and I sneak off and she thinks I'm going and looking for an idol and she's hustling to make sure I don't find anything. Mm-hmm. And we sit together and she's just keeping an eye on me, making sure I'm not being sneaky. And I kind of tell her, I'm like, Victoria, what's your game going to be if you get to the end? Like, what are you going to tell people? Cause I didn't think she had much. And she's kind of, she doesn't tell me everything, obviously, but she kind of goes through things. And what she tells me and the way she presents it really opened my eyes. And I went, wow, like Vic in Final Tribal is dangerous. So then Chris comes back in and he kind of confirms that the jury thinks the same thing, that Vic has really been playing a lot harder than we were giving her credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And so... So that night, Vic is saying, listen, you got to get rid of Chris. The jury loves Chris. This is your one definite chance to get rid of Chris. And I'm saying, you know, I'm pretending like I'm thinking I might, but in my mind, I'm always getting rid of Vic because I know Vic is a big threat. I think she's a bigger threat than Chris at that point. And I'm, you know, I'm going to be loyal to Chris for sure at that point. There's no way I'm going to turn on him. Mm-hmm. So, but when Chris comes and tells me that Lauren's going to play the idol on him, I tell him he's crazy. I'm like, dude, you might need to use my fake.
Yeah.
You might need to try something. He said, no, she has an idol, which shocked me.
Yeah.
And then he says, and she's going to play it on me. I got, you know, Kelly told me some things and I'm going to get her to play it on me. And I was like, there's no way, man. There's no way you're going to be able to do that. So good for him, because even him telling me what he was going to do, I just did not see it coming.
This was a confusing vote in terms of how this final six vote shook out. But from what I understand, it was just you and Chris. You were the only two votes on Victoria.
Right. We manipulated the others into voting only for us, who we knew would be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided we'd get rid of Vic.
Yeah.
This is the point in the game where it's like, I knew I'd been on the wrong side of so many votes, and I couldn't get in strategically. Like, I was so frustrated by not being able to be in strategically that when Chris came back, it was such a like, I almost played a stupider game than I should have,
mm-hmm.
just because I had someone to play with and to finally take control of this vote and the next vote. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was fun. But Vic was such a champ on the way out, too. I mean, I can't even express, like, how crazy I would have gone without Vic out there to look at every time I wanted to make kind of like a snide comment,
mm-hmm.
because I know that she'd be thinking the same thing.
Yeah. So, all right, Victoria is out, and now we're down to the final five, and this is going to be another immunity win for you.
Right, yeah.
And then, so congratulations on immunity number four. And now, this is the last night that you could play your idol, and so you have the opportunity to do something with it, and you land on that you want to protect Gavin with this immunity idol. Can you talk a little bit about that decision?
Yeah. So obviously, I didn't need to use it on myself. I didn't need to use it on Chris, because he had his own.
Right.
Idol. And I wasn't going to use it on, or I knew that I wanted something out of it. I was definitely going to play it because, you know, I don't need a souvenir from Survivor. It's like the last tribal that you can make a splash before fire making. Obviously, I wanted to make as big a possible splash as, you know, as humanly possible. Especially, I wanted the visual of two people playing fakes and then me playing a real one. So once I decided I'm definitely playing it, it was like, what can I get out of it? The only thing that can help me at all is a promise to not go into fire making. I know Julie's lied to me. I know Lauren's lied to me. Gavin hasn't technically lied to me. I also really like Gavin. I feel like I can, I mean, at this point in the game, I believed I could beat all of them. So it didn't matter in the final three. So I was just, okay, I'll get Gavin to make this promise. And he and I still laugh that the old office line of like, I've made a lot of empty promises in my day.
Mm-hmm.
But we both knew it was a lie as he was saying it.
Yeah.
But why not?
So
I couldn't think of anything else I could get out of it.
I want to go back to something that you said earlier about how that you didn't know that how Chris was going to be perceived with the jury. So were you thinking about sort of like if you had a similar deal with Chris about he would take you to the end potentially if he won the final four, and that he would have been somebody who was easy to beat in the final tribal council?
If I got to Chris in the final three,
yeah,
I thought Chris would be a very easy opponent to beat in the final three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought you know, because everyone, when they're in the game before they go to the edge, says, you know, these edge players haven't been here the whole post merge. You know, if one comes in, we need to vote them right back out. This is our game. You know, they're not playing like we're playing. So that's all I've heard from being in the game. Clearly, once you get to the edge, your perspective changes for obvious reasons.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm thinking specifically because it was Chris and he'd been gone so long. I thought I was not concerned about him in the final three. I really misread that. If it had been someone that had gone out as recently as a Kelly, I would have been very concerned. You know, she did a lot of stuff in the game.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, Chris hadn't beat me at fire making or any of that
right,
stuff.
Right.
Which was huge, I think.
Just to skip ahead a little bit, what were you surprised that Chris was the winner when you ultimately got to the final tribal council?
I was not surprised then, but I was totally shocked when I got to Ponderosa and found out that he was the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I felt going into final that it was pretty clear that Chris was the favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't believe it. I was really shocked when I heard that. I had totally misread that, to my detriment.
So I want to talk about those fake idols that were around in that final five when you ended up not only finding another idol at this point, and that is idol find number three.
Yeah, fine number three, yep.
Okay.
And then I had one that I got back when
right,
I came in.
Right. So you end up planting two fake idols. This was like a blindside that you had these fake idols. Can you talk about the genesis of those fake idols?
Yeah, so David had put the idea in my head real early to make fake idols. And at the time that he and I had talked about it, the only idol we'd seen was our half and half idol. That's this like beautiful jade circle. So when David left the game, I said, I'm going to use David's idea. And I tried to make this beautiful emerald looking circle with our paint. I mixed up new paint. I cut off the top of a coffee container. I carved an actual Chinese symbol in that I saw off the tee, and it looked horrible. I mean, so bad. And I was just like, oh man, I'm in a lot of trouble here. Then I found my first idol, and it was so much less impressive than the one that David and I had that I said, oh, I can make a fake one of these. So I think it was the helicopter reward that Aurora and Julie and I were left behind on, that after Aurora made it clear that she was not going to be persuaded, I just kind of snuck off and I made two different fakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I held on to one, and then I immediately went and hid the other one up above the shelter where I had found my original. And my plan originally wasn't to have someone else find it. That was like my emergency plan, that if I got to a tribal where I needed something and I had nothing, I didn't have the necklace and I didn't have an idol, I was going to, in front of people, like right before tribal, climb the tree and grab it down. And then go to tribal mm-hmm. and pull out the note and be like, I found this earlier. I didn't have a chance where there was no one in camp, so I had to buy a you know, that's what I was going to sell.
Yeah.
But then when the time came that I didn't need it, it was just another distraction that I could put out there while I searched for the real thing.
Yeah. And what was that like going into that final five tribal council where you knew these real idols were getting played and these fake idols were going to be getting played?
Well, I was super excited about it. And I know some people think it's kind of mean-spirited, but there was a lot of strategy behind that. You want to make a big splash in front of everyone. It's your last chance. It's also like my only thing that the others could use against me, really, to argue against me, is that I didn't have control of the game and that I was out of the loop a lot. So by getting people to play my fakes, it shows that I'm in control and they're out of the loop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of just laughing about it, I was just having a lot of fun that day.
Yeah.
I knew I was safe. I had a friend to play with again in Chris, which was fun. I'd been on the bottom for so long that to feel like I had some control felt really great. So I understand that that might be hard for some people to watch back, but like there was nothing malicious. I was just having a ton of fun about it. And then the same thing when I got to tribal. Like when they played those, I was just looking at the jury knowing how much they were going to enjoy it. The first one gets played and it's fake, which I think kind of makes you doubtful of the second one, but almost makes you more confident in the second one, especially since you had a clue and it was in a tree, but then it's fake too. Yeah. And I remember during that one, Vic made eye contact with me from the jury and said, is it fake? And I just said, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So before anyone else knew, Vic knew what was up and just died.
Yeah.
That was again, it depends on what side you're on of it, but I was having fun and I certainly wasn't trying to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
So I hope no one took it the wrong way. I know Julie and I have talked about it a bunch And her kids still give her credit for finding an idol. So she's good.
Hey, that's
happy.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good. So this is also the round where you end up giving the other half of the idol back to Chris after he survived the final six. I mean, was there any hesitation about giving it back to him? I know that it's been talked a lot since the finale, but was there even an inkling of, maybe I shouldn't give it back to Chris?
Yeah, there was. Like, I did think strategically this is a bad move. I held on to it till at least I knew I was safe, like, because I was using it to make him help me search for an idol.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I found my idol and knew I was safe, as much as I had thought about it and known that strategically it probably would have been a good move, I the reason I gave it right back to him is because I was always going to give it right back to him. I could not, knowing what I'd known then, have done anything different, no matter how big a mistake it turned out to be. And I do think it was $1 million mistake. I believe that. But yeah, I definitely don't think I would have done anything differently at the time. I didn't really consider anything different.
So now on to the final four after Lauren gets voted out.
Who went out like a champ, by the way. She totally could have turned on me and said, "You did this in front of my family, you villain." And she was such a good sport about it, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah. So now we get to the final four, and now this time Chris is going to win the immunity. And you guys had talked about, going to the end together, and now you are sitting there with Chris. And you have to not be feeling good about this, that Chris is now asking you, like, well, why? Tell me why I should take you to the end.
Yeah, it became clear pretty quickly. I really thought getting back to camp that there might be a chance that he would take me to the end just because we had played this loyalty thing. And again, like, my pitch to him was, and it was so wrong, it was like, Chris, you do not have a chance to win, right? Like, don't torpedo my game just to get second to Gavin or Julie, when we're so close. And the whole day, I thought his decision was basically whether to put me into fire making against Julie or Gavin, which again, I felt confident, or to put them against themselves. Like, I considered him putting himself in, but because I didn't think that he believed he had a chance, and because I felt like he's got nothing to lose, so that wouldn't be as impressive as it seems, like with a Dom, if a Dom had done it, I didn't really believe he'd put himself in, even though I considered it. Now, when you get to tribal and you see him do it, the visual, it still comes across as very impactful, even though he doesn't have a lot to lose. I mean, you're playing for fourth or first versus fourth or third, I guess. But so I wasn't floored by it when he took the necklace off, but it wasn't what I was expecting.
Yeah. There was a line at that Final Four Tribal Council that I thought was hysterical, and it got a really big laugh in the room. This is when Julie is talking about how that she would like the opportunity to make fire, and Gavin is talking about the opportunity that he would like the opportunity to make fire, and then you say,
"Well, this is great." Yeah.
I felt like, oh, this has really come together. Perfect. Let's watch.
Yeah. That was just a, another classic quick Devin's moment in the season. But yeah, Chris had other plans. He wanted you to go in and make the fire against him. But you on the show, it might have seemed like that, okay, well, you were not an expert fire maker, that you did feel very strongly about your ability to make the fire, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd practiced fire a ton before going on Survivor. I don't go from the Rob Sesternino rule book on that one.
Yeah.
I'm a big fire practicer. And then when I'd gotten out there, like, once I realized that I was the threat and people weren't going to work for me, like, every day it was just like, what can I do today to further my game? And after I'd made my fake idols, the only thing I could do was practice fire. And I would make several fires a day. I mean, just, I would say, guys, I'm going off to make fire. And that's all I would do is make fire as fast as I could. So by the time the challenge came along, I'd made, you know, over a dozen fires that week for sure, and made at least four or five that day. So I was real confident against everyone except Chris, who I knew was a great fire maker, and I knew had been practicing fire. Well, I didn't know, but I assumed had been practicing fire all he wanted on Edge of Extinction.
Right.
'Cause like me being on the bottom, being on the edge, there are no consequences for going off and making fire.
What else is there to do? Right.
Exactly. And no one's going to get mad at you about it. Whereas if Gavin or Julie or, you know, Lauren had gone off, that'd have been like, you know, more incentive to either put them in, or, you know, it just affects your game if you're in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was the wind a factor at all? I know that that you guys had to move to the voting booth to do your fire. Did the how windy it was change anything for you?
No, I think the fact that we were in the voting booth, it was like ideal conditions. It was crazy windy that night. So if we hadn't been in the booth, it would have been a nightmare. But in the booth, it was like super ideal conditions, which between that and Chris just being really, really good at fire making, they said it was by far the quickest fire they've ever had.
Yeah,
in a fire making, which made me feel kind of good because mine's right there. I really think 30 more seconds and I'm burning the robe, which is a big difference, but
yeah,
not in the scheme of things.
Rick, ultimately, you go out here at the Final Four. What was your reaction to getting so close?
You know, at first I was real upset with Chris. I wasn't really okay with Chris till I got back to Ponderosa and found out that he did have a shot. And then you can't be mad at him. It's like, then he did exactly what he's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, man, I was just devastated. I knew it was my game to lose. Like, it was so clear by the jury's reaction that literally if I'd won that challenge or not been in that challenge, that's it. It's over. Not to mention, I feel very comfortable about a final tribal because tribal's like my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just devastated. I was super bummed, but I was also really proud of the game I'd played. You know, I hadn't had Reddit react to it yet, so I still felt pretty good. I didn't know at that point that playing with idols and immunity wins was disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they gave me the clapping on the way out, which I guess was Vic's idea, but everyone got in on, like, that really made me emotional. That was really exactly what I mean. That was like the sea of money at the time. You know, I was super down and they lifted me up.
Yeah.
Just getting that respect from your fellow castmates was really cool.
So you got to turn it around real quick and then get to the final tribal council, you know, 24 hours after being out of the game. But you ended up being one of the more vocal advocates for Gavin. You were a vote for Gavin. And, you know, Chris was somebody who you and he were the only two people that had it in common where you ended up being out of the game and then coming back in. Could you just talk through your vote for Gavin a little bit?
Yeah, I think at the end of that tribal, first of all, I think all three of them would have been really good winners. I actually thought about Julie, too. I think Julie was at, just to get this out of the way, like talking in Ponderosa, the talk was all kind of about Gavin and Chris. So going into tribal, we all had Gavin and Chris on our mind. I think Julie performed well enough at the end of tribal that I'm going, man, she had two immunity wins. She made all her arguments. But at that point, it almost felt like a Nader vote. Like, you knew other people weren't going that way. So between Chris and Gavin, I looked at it whereas like Chris and I had similar games, but I felt like I did what Chris did, except even more so, like longer and more thing. You know what I mean? Whereas I looked at Gavin and Julie and I'm like, they did something I couldn't do. They stayed in the game the whole time. And then I just looked at how long, the reason I believed Chris didn't have a chance when I went back to Ponderosa was just because of how few games he played post merge, which I thought was the hardest part of the game was post merge. And I just knew what my time on Edge of Extinction was like. And for me, my time being in the game post-merge was so much harder and so much more stressful than my time on Edge of Extinction, that I just had to respect that Gavin was in there that whole time and managing to navigate this stuff and not get a single vote against him. And some people are going to tell you, like, I didn't vote against him because I didn't see he was a threat, and that's fine. I did see him as a threat. I saw him as someone who was very liked socially and someone who was very good in challenges. And I actually think I'd be interested to hear their perspective on this, because I mean this respectfully to both of them. I think Vic and Gavin played basically the same game.
Mm-hmm.
But that Vic, the whole time, we knew, oh, that's wild Vic. Like, we really like her, but we know she'll cut us anytime, that Vic. Whereas Gavin, it's like, oh, that Gavin, we love Gavin. He's so sweet. He really loves us. And then when he cuts you, you're like, how dare he? I can't believe he would ever do that to me.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Again, that's how she presented herself and how she did. So more power. I just feel like there were some people who never really got over the fact that Gavin might have voted him out, and Chris did not have to do that.
Yeah. You know, that's a really interesting observation, where I wonder if that stems from the fact of, like, oh, well, Gavin is nice, and that's why, you know, he has a good social game and he's nice to everybody, where Victoria, I think that people felt like that she's my friend, but maybe nice isn't the word that they would use to describe Victoria.
Right. Nice Gavin, wild Vic.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you love them both, but absolutely, there's a whole mindset. Like, if Gavin stabs me in the back, I'm definitely like, hey, you know, you're supposed to be the good old boy. That's what you were.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Vic, it's like, oh, you told me you were going to do that, you dog.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is so impressive that she's able to do that. Like, even thinking about it now, I'm like, how could I feel that way about anybody?
Mm-hmm.
So good on her for being able to put that out there, me being able to see that, and even, like, a year later kind of realized that that was the case.
Rick, thank you for taking us through all of this. I know I really appreciate it. I'm sure that the listeners do too. I have some questions for you from the patrons of Rob as a Podcast.
Okay, super.
Okay, all right. Let's bounce around a little bit. Matt Wilcott says, in some exit interviews, Lauren mentioned that there was animosity between you two while you were on the island. Is that true, and where did that friction come from?
I think that there was some animosity between Lauren and I on the island. I mean, you see the eye rolls.
Mm-hmm.
You see my frustration with Lasso. I think we were just out there a long time together. I mean, we were out there from the beginning. We were actually really close for the first beginning of it. And then we just spent too much time out there together. And we never had that Edge of Extinction or that Ponderosa time to really talk and heal over it. I've reached out to her a couple times, you know, during the season, and she's been back, and it's been great. I love seeing her at the reunion. She was so great to my family. So it's a bummer that we had that negativity, but I think that we can, I don't think it's anything we can't get past. I think she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's just us being out there and being hungry for a long time, I think.
Okay. Alex G wants to know, did you ever fear that any of your idols were fake?
I probably should have, but I didn't, because I just didn't see anyone going off on their own long enough to do that. I was basically the one that was scrambling at that point in the game. Like, I was out all the time, and a lot of people would follow me for parts of those times. I know Aurora is frustrated because she did follow me a lot, but I didn't see anybody who had enough time to on their own to kind of sneak off and be mischievous like that. That would have been fun for me to play a fake. That would have been a taste of my own medicine.
Renee Lucas wants to know, even though you were a highly featured character, what didn't get shown that you wish did?
I would fall a lot and always try to land really gracefully. I would always try to land in a pose, including right on Chris's lap. On the Edge of Whoa. Extinction, we'll bring Bryce Isaiah in for that one. On the Edge of Extinction, Chris and I got married. Aubrey performed the ceremony.
Yes.
He since that had that annulled and married the love of his life. I'm not bitter about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a lot of fun we had around camp. The Manu tribe, as dysfunctional as we were, like that night 3 that it rained on us, I mean, we were cracking up the whole night. And I think we had a lot of fun that wasn't shown this season. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they did. I believe me, I'm the last person to be upset about the edit, though. I think they did an amazing job.
This was from Edward Morris, who he was the one that had was David ultimately the drunk one earlier, but he also wanted to know, what did you write in your letter to yourself? Were you disappointed that you didn't get your letter from yourself?
It would have been the most worthless thing in the entire world, because at the beginning of the game, I was so annoyed that they were having letters to ourselves. My whole letter was like, this is dumb. You're just here for $1 million. Focus. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I would have just been berating myself out there, which is funny because looking back, I'm like, oh, I was so ignorant writing that letter. Like, there's so much to be found out here. But no, it would have been so worthless to me. Whereas my family letter was like the most uplifting thing ever. That probably would have had a bigger impact on those Edge folks.
Okay. Drew Bingham wants to know, what's your favorite flavor of Kool-Aid?
I'm going classic fruit punch.
Fruit punch. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice when I can get to ask somebody that question and it's relevant.
And Kool-Aid, I can't believe you haven't reached out yet. I'm so insulted.
Yes.
Might go to Hawaiian Punch and see if they have any interest.
You're going to shop around.
Absolutely. Hey,
you're a free agent. You're jumping ship.
Exactly. I thought they would want me. I thought that they would love me, and clearly they don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
That they may not have somebody in their marketing department watching Survivor.
Well, they need to talk to the In Delight people.
Yeah. Maybe does Sia have any contacts at Kool-Aid?
I'll text her. I'll text her. We're pretty close. I'll ask her at the barbecue this weekend.
Vegan barbecue better be. Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Elizabeth wants to know, did you ever consider using the move that you previewed with Josh Wiggler on First One Out as a possible strategy for when you knew you were on the chopping block, running up to somebody, lingering awkwardly, and then when someone else saw you there, pretending to trip as you ran away? You were on the chopping block so long, I kept waiting for you to execute that.
You know what? It crossed my mind, but I always ended up finding idols instead.
Okay.
So I never got that desperate. And my emergency move I told you about like climbing up in the tree in front of everyone and pulling down the idol and then showing the clue later, that was my equivalent in the game. That was my desperation move that I was going to do. But it never came to having to run up to butt somebody and trip.
Okay.
Maybe for 14th chances.
Okay. Edward Morris also wants to know, who is your favorite Toy Story character? You were spotted wearing a Toy Story t-shirt.
Yeah, I'm big time Team Rex.
Team Rex, okay.
Yeah, I like to think of myself as a bit of a Rex.
Yes, those short arms are not good for finding idols, though.
That's true. He would have some issues with the idol finding. But, you know, we love him for other reasons.
Okay. This is a question from William, who says, I'm a huge Rick fan, so this isn't a criticism at all, but it's someone who is out there and who also has an obvious familiarity with the television production. Why does Rick think the show ended up featuring him so prominently relative to the other players on the season? Why did we get so much Rick Devens?
Oh, boy. Well, I think some of it you can't even avoid. I mean, if they have to show me finding idols and they have to show me winning challenges, like I just did do more of those than others. I had a few funny lines that I thought were funny and I guess they thought were funny. I don't know, man. The other people on my cast were also delightful, and I'm sure there's a lot of good stuff out there. Every time they contacted me and asked specifically about what they should edit, I told them more Rick. So it might be partially my fault.
There wasn't
I was
enough.
Texting Jeff and Matt every day because they wouldn't leave me alone about it. Rick, we don't know what to do with this scene. And I'm just like, put in one of my lines from earlier, you know? So I guess that's my bad. William, you know what? Thank you for trying not to blame me, but I think that is my fault.
Okay. Rick, what's next for you now that all of this Survivor craziness is in the past?
Well, I don't know if I'm fired yet because I haven't been to work because of jury duty.
Right.
So I still haven't been to work since I told national television that I was available.
Right. And then also, like, do people not believe you when you say, like, oh, I'm on jury duty? Like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, we know where you really are, Rick.
Right. Exactly. Everyone's like, what job did Jeff give you after he said that? And I'm like, I haven't actually got any job offers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I really love it down here in Macon, and we're really enjoying ourselves, and we'll see what happens. I'm going to start a podcast.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's going to be about the last chapters of books, like how authors really address going into the last chapter of a book. And we're going to see if we can use any of that information to kind of talk to the Game of Thrones people.
That's perfect.
How you can do that last section a little more thoroughly.
Okay. How has this affected your career in terms of, like, on air? Does it come up a lot? They talk about, let's, you know, talk to our resident survivor, or is the survivor stuff, not at all part of the newscast?
It's been part of the newscast just as previews for the show, but it'll probably fade out of the newscast pretty quickly. It's hard to, like, transition. It's like, you know, oh, yeah, that robbery reminds me of this time that Aurora was going through my bag.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know anything, call Crime Stoppers.
Yes.
So it hasn't functioned into much on the local news level.
Yes.
But it's been fun. Definitely, I'm getting a lot more love as Survivor Rick than I ever got as Morning Anchor Rick.
Yes.
Which has been great.
Yes.
We'll see. I always the reason I always enjoy morning news is because you can have more fun. So if this turned into something where I can have even more fun, then that's kind of what I'm going for.
Okay. Now, is your station, are you guys a CBS affiliate?
We are not a CBS affiliate.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not real sure how that would work. I don't know if I wouldn't be allowed to do the show if I was a CBS affiliate.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of think the reason I was able to do it is because I'm a Fox ABC affiliate.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if they if they really want you, I think they figure out a way to have you.
Well, that works for me.
Okay.
But yeah, our CBS affiliate down here was pretty cool about it. I mean, even though I'm the competition, they still covered everything.
Okay. Rick, well, this was a real treat for me. You were so nice to talk to at the finale and then also today. So I really appreciate you making all this time for me.
Well, I certainly have been looking forward to being on here. And for all of the people out there that defended me because I was just trying to be nice, thank you.
Oh.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I had so much fun out there, Rob. I hope that translated, that I really enjoyed the people I played with and that I just really had fun the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I think that it definitely did come through, and this was, a real, real treat for me to get to go through everything with you.
Outstanding. Anytime RHAP calls, I'll be at the ready.
Yeah. Now, were you offered the chance to go out to Vegas? It looks like that War Dog and Chris were partying.
Yes, I was invited out to Vegas. I believe Aurora and Julia were also out there, and I think I'm missing somebody.
Yeah.
Ron was out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was a party, but Rebecca and I, going to L.A. was enough of a vacation, and we were exhausted after a week of L.A., so the thought of a weekend in Vegas for two parents, like, that probably would have killed us, Rob. You saw me the night of the finale. I was worn out.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rick, thank you so much, and really appreciate you spending so much time with us, and I hope to do this again soon.
Absolutely, man. Anytime you need me. Thanks so much.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Rick Devins here on the podcast. First of our Survivor post-season interviews for you here on Rob is a Podcast. And I do hope that it is the first of many interviews that I will do with the Survivor Edge of Extinction cast. I really appreciate Rick Devin spending so much time with us talking about his story for me and for you here today on the podcast. So we've got a lot more coming up. Next up, I'm going to be talking with the winner of Survivor, The Edge of Extinction, and that would be Mr. Chris Underwood. So be on the lookout for that podcast coming up shortly. Of course, I want to thank the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast who make all of this podcasting possible for me to talk to these survivors hour on end, just like we did all season long. Of course, so much going on in the Rob's Podcast patron community, even still during the summer. If you want to check out everything that we have going on, access to our patron-only podcast feed, and much more, head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.